use an organisation's position so to do. I'll be asking for your reactions on that. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the world... increased bombing in Kyiv, a Russian drone swarm attack in the early hours of this morning. Residents fleeing their apartment, injuring four. It's yet unclear whether there are any fatalities. Back at home, get ready to put your phone calls to one of the nation's top cops.
Heroin, e-bikes and cash has all been seized as part of a big neighbourhood policing operation in Greater Manchester. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers in Brinnington.
And the Chief Constable, Sir Stephen Watson, is taking your calls later in the show. Plus, how Black Friday is one big con, and we're also going cold on the idea of heat pumps. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to unite behind her budget, insisting she'll be in the job for years to come. Rachel Reeves told backbenchers measures announced tomorrow will be progressive but warned of difficult choices. Ms Reeves also reportedly conceded last night that pre-budget leaks have been incredibly destabilising. The former boss of Sainsbury's, Justin Kings, told LBC it's been shambolic.
My background is retail, and business doesn't exist in a vacuum. The most important thing for retail businesses is consumer confidence, and we just had an extended period of uncertainty. It's impacted on consumer confidence. It's definitely impacted on business confidence as a result.
So Keir Starmer is preparing to host a call with Ukraine's allies as part of efforts to end Russia's invasion. Ukrainian officials say at least four people have been killed in the latest Russian attack against the capital, Kyiv. The head of the Commons Culture Committee has questioned whether the BBC's chairman can end an impartiality scandal at the corporation. Dame Caroline Dynage says evidence Samir Shah gave in Parliament yesterday was too wishy-washy. The BBC's Director General and Head of News resigned earlier this month following a misleading edit of Donald Trump. Former BBC producer David Elsteins told LBC News there's no reason for Mr Shah to step down.
Quite a few kites that have been flown in recent weeks were shot down spectacularly. We discovered, for instance, that the BBC board non-executive who had resigned on Sunday complaining he hadn't been consulted, Samir Shah was able to point out the chairman of the BBC had spent 26 minutes talking to him on that Sunday, along with every other member of the board.
Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims he was racist towards pupils while at school. He says there are huge political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. Reform UK say the allegations are entirely without foundation. Labour says Mr Farage should come clean about the claims regarding his past. And Ofcom has urged technology firms to step up their efforts to tackle the trolling of online abuse towards women and girls. The communications regulator has published new guidance. It includes measures such as prompts that'll ask users to reconsider before posting harmful content. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 95.35. It closed down 5 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest. Mild again, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven on Tuesday, November the 25th. Yes, just 1 month to go, but I'm sure all the children's Christmas presents are safely wrapped up and hidden by the airing cupboard or whatever it might be. Let's go to today's news. And with its unerring ability to turn a crisis, a drama into a crisis, the BBC continue. Now they're not tackling bias, warns the author behind that leaked memo, and a rather shaky performance from the man who, unbelievably, is still there as the chairman. We'll have more on that in a moment. Meanwhile, overnight, Russian drone swarms struck homes in Kyiv in the early hours. President Zelensky speaking about Putin's territorial demands in those peace talks.
Putin wants legal recognition for what he has stolen, to break the principle of territorial integrity and sovereignty.
Question, ever heard of a fish disco? No, me neither. But more than £700 million is being spent at Hinkley Point C nuclear power station on environmental measures that could save one salmon a year. Yes, you did hear that correctly. Business and Trade Secretary Peter Carr speaking yesterday with LBC about the amount of money spent.
Since I've come into this job, I've looked at a number of regulatory issues which doesn't make sense to me, which is why I have cut and reformed £230 million worth of regulatory barriers to business.
Plus, why you're going cold on heat pumps, and this senior police officer.
There are grieving families and communities at the heart of this, in Greater Manchester and beyond.
That's Chief Constable of Greater Manchester, Sir Stephen Watson, speaking at a press conference following the Manchester Synagogue terror attack last month. He will join us for calls later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The BBC still banging the drum that they are the most trusted news provider. They're in a unique position to combat fake news, unique anywhere in the globe, as put forward by its chairman, Dr. Samir Shah. No, he's not a medical doctor, although he does sort of have the feel, the presence of a medical doctor. He actually has a doctorate in philosophy, specialising in anthropology and geography. And let's face it, if you've got a broadcaster in crisis, you want to send for a philosopher who specialises in anthropology. Dr. Shah telling the panel of MPs yesterday that he thought that Tim Davie was a tremendous DG. It occurred to me, if he's a good one, I'd love to have asked him, what does a bad one look like? Here to praise everything we heard and some of what we learned yesterday, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, very choppy waters for the man trying to steer the BBC ship this week. Samir Shah under fire by MPs after that culture committee hearing yesterday. The chair, Caroline Dynage, has said overnight his evidence was wishy-washy. She is concerned about a lack of grip at the heart of BBC governments. Now, she's not calling for him to go yet, but it's fair to say that she was far from happy with his performance. She couldn't say that the BBC is in safe hands. And speaking yesterday, Samir Shah gave an apology to MPs and licence fee payers for the slew of issues that had built up at the BBC, but he insisted that he wasn't going anywhere.
I think right now my job is to steer the ship out of the shopper into an even keel and make sure, and the most important job I have right now is to recruit a Director General. It is far and away the most important thing I need to do.
And Nick, he told MPs that Tim Davie, who obviously resigned over the handling of that Panorama documentary, which edited clips of Donald Trump, he said that in his view, Davie should not have resigned.
I do not think the Director General should have resigned. I think that the act by the Director of News was an honourable and proper act. I think she took responsibility, for which I will again say I applaud her for doing so. I do not think that that meant that the Director General at all had to resign.
And earlier on, we'd heard from Michael Prescott. He was the man who had written that memo, which was leaked to The Telegraph, which led to a week of chaos at the BBC. He said his concerns about problems and about bias were not being taken seriously by the BBC.
I was hoping that the concerns I had could and would be addressed privately. In the first instance, that was why I wrote to the board. It became pretty clear to me the board was not taking stuff as seriously as I'd hoped and assumed it would. And as regards particularly Tim Davie, for what little use or worth this is to him now, firstly, I always liked the guy. And secondly, most importantly, to the extent that inexpert me can judge, he seemed to me to be doing a first-rate job across 80 or 90% of the portfolio. It was just that he had this blind spot on editorial failings.
And Nick, we also heard from the Conservative, who's been accused of a coup on the BBC board. Sir Robbie Gibb insisted that he was not biased in the slightest.
There couldn't be a bigger mismatch between the way I'm presented in some quarters in relation to my attitude. I think I'd become weaponised in terms of how I'm perceived. Everyone who know me, you know, I'm hugely impartial. I have friends across the political divide. I have impartiality through my bones, and I've always been a big campaigner.
So what now, Nick? Well, it feels to me yesterday's session created more questions than answers for the BBC. It's fair to say MPs far from satisfied from what they heard. It feels like Shah's position is a bit more shaky. Lisa Nandy told me last week she was happy that the BBC were taking things seriously at the very top. I think a question for her today is, does she still think that? It feels very much among those MPs they don't want to lose the chair right now, but it's clear that Shah has a very urgent job to do. He needs to get that urgent new Director General in, and fast.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting just 10 minutes after 7. Let's bring into the conversation Ollie Dugmore, who's executive editor for digital of The New Statesman, joining me now. Ollie, over yesterday's hearings and the last few weeks or even months, what have you learnt about the BBC and its handling of news? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I think we've learnt about the BBC that, like many other news organisations, it makes mistakes. And like any good news organisation, there should be a frequent exchange of correction, of clarification. And I think it's quite striking, actually. You know, how many other news publishers are subject to the level of scrutiny that the BBC is hauled in front of a select committee?
And how many others litigated? Are publicly funded?
Well, yes, quite. It's right that we scrutinise it in the way that we do, but I think we're probably talking about, well, we know we're talking about the most trusted news organisation in the UK and in most other parts of the world. And particularly actually in the case of Davey, someone who was navigating an incredibly difficult period in the organisation's history.
People probably of my age, and around my age, but for young people, which obviously are the future subscribers, listeners, viewers or whatever, and possible licence fee payers, that trust, as you're probably aware, Ollie, falls off a cliff. What is to be done by the BBC about that?
Yeah, I think it needs to take it incredibly seriously. I think us as journalists, all of us need to take it incredibly seriously, because younger people are turning away from what we would typically describe as your mainstream typical news outlets. They get their news from TikTok, they get it from YouTube, and where it's actually beholden to all of us, not just the BBC, to meet those younger audiences where they are and provide them with the news, with honest reporting, accurate reporting, in the places that they are, and not just expect them to turn on the wireless.
Can one man or woman really be expected to be across the entire output of the BBC? So that's everything from Strictly Come Dancing through Traitors to the Arabic Channel to Panorama and the 6 o'clock news. Ollie?
No, I don't think they can. It's why you have a leadership team. It's why you have senior managers, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, any of those instances that you singled out there, Nick, I'd add to them probably the greatest living documentary maker in Adam Curtis and the work that he does at the BBC. Would he be able to do that at any other outlet with commercial pressures in the way that they're not there at the BBC? You know, when it comes to morning phone-in shows, there's only one Nick for me. His last name is Ferrari, but you know, there are others available there. Okay, I like 6:06. I like 6:06 after the football. You know, In Our Time, great program. There's this huge wealth. David Attenborough, Louis Theroux. There's this huge wealth of programming out there, isn't it? And I think the licence fee does provide a pretty good cost for value there.
How surprised are you now that we know that the BBC, knew back in May, and subsequently the head of news or chief executive has fallen on her sword, as has the director general, the chair or chairman, Dr. Shah, has no intention of leaving? How surprising do you find that, seeing as he did know about all of this in May and, with others, chose not to act?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't think Davey should have gone over it, to be honest with you. No, I don't. I think, you know, there have been other scandals, right, in the BBC's history, entirely deserving of the DG, Director General, stepping down. Savile would be one. Yeah. The coverage of the Iraq War, absolutely, would be another. In this instance, there have been multiple. I think it's kind of attritional, right? You know, that whether it's Bob Villain at Glastonbury, the documentary that was voiced, narrated by the son of a Hamas commander, or in this instance, the Trump edit, right? With Trump, Did it materially change what he was saying? I think it presented him as a slightly more belligerent version of himself. But at the end of the day, you know, did it misrepresent what he said on that day? No, I don't think it did. You know, as we know from the testimony of, I think it's about 200 of the people arrested for January 6th and then convicted, they say that what he said motivated them to march on the Capitol. I don't think Panorama misrepresented his position in the edit that they made. I think it was bad journalism. I think they should have signalled it better. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. But I think it was worthy of a correction, a clarification. I definitely don't think the Director General should have resigned over it.
Ollie Dugmore is Executive Editor for Digital of the New Statesman. Ollie, thank you for your time. 7:14 at the hearing yesterday, we heard the chairman of the BBC say that he didn't believe that there was institutional bias. He said that he did not consider it to be institutionally biased. Meanwhile, the so-called whistleblower, the former political editor, Michael Prescott, says there is elements of some, in many cases, unintentional bias. When you hear BBC Verify, when you hear the BBC, is there bias now? Have they tidied up their act? Or, as it's an organisation that still can't bring itself to call Hamas terrorists, Lord only knows why, what faith can we give it? We'll take your calls and views on that. Also, coming up after the news. They're not hanging back. The sound of a door being taken off its hinges as a raid by Greater Manchester Police and a crackdown on serious organised crime. Our correspondent was there. We'll have his full report. And I remind you, the relevant Chief Constable is taking your calls later in the show. Also after the news.
The government moves one step closer towards Heathrow's third runway, picking its preferred plan, but not yet its preferred builder. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this with Nick shortly.
7:15 now, LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to unite behind her budget tomorrow, insisting she'll be in the job for years to come. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to host a call with Ukraine's allies as part of efforts to end Russia's invasion. And the head of the Commons Culture Committee has questioned whether the BBC's chairman can end an impartiality scandal at the corporation. LBC weather dry and bright for most, showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 at the M26 towards the Clackett Lane services. It's because a lorry has broken down and one lane is closed. A car's broken down on the M3 northbound just before Junction 3 at Lightwater, and that's also causing delays. A car's also broken down on the A3 at Kennington. It's southbound right near to the tube station, so there are delays on the approach. In Raynes Park, Walpole Road remains closed eastbound, and that's because of an accident, but westbound has now reopened. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Hammersmith and Bakerloo lines, and there are also the problems on the Central line continue. Lancaster Gate station remains closed.
This is LBC.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
Really simple things that a small business can do today is educating employees. It's imperative that we think about cybersecurity not just as a tech thing, but it's really a human thing. It's all about the human behind the computer and training your team to really be aware.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business, LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of.
Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, Doug, you'll be the first caller on the BBC. The level of trust, still saying that it is there's no bias there. I think some of you might have other views. Take you through some of the front pages. I'm not going to give you all the budget speculation because no one knows. And you haven't. I was reminded, actually, I was talking to someone yesterday. I was an executive at the Daily Mirror. Those of you with long memories, in 1996, I looked it up when I was at the Daily Mirror. We actually got a copy of the budget. And to this day, I still can't tell you the journalist who was involved. But all we can say is that we got a copy of the budget and we hid it in the chimney, one of the reporters' chimneys, just in case they raided the office, because it was seen as a very grand... There was a possibility at one point that the editor would go to jail. I was doing everything I can to ensure that, because then I'd have got the job, writing notes, send him to jail, put Banksy behind bars. But that was huge. That was when you actually get the budget, right, which is what we did at the Mirror 100 years ago, 29 years ago in reality. So all this speculation I find a little bit tedious. But let me tell you the stories that we can run. Here we go, the Daily Telegraph. Not surprising they splash or put it on their front page, as they have been very much in the vanguard of this story. They had the leaked memo from Mr. Philpott. BBC in disarray over bias claims. Very much the line that we're taking. The Times is all about the budget. I is all about the budget. Daily Express is about the budget. And, oh, my Lord. Well, The Sun tells us, sadly, that Jeff Brazier has split from his wife, Kate Dwyer, after 7 years. That's bad news. I hope the two of them can work that out. And there's more budget speculation for the front page of the Daily Mail going after prudent savers. Oh, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is the Metro. More than 1,000 abusers have been handed tough new protection orders in the years since they began. And The Guardian has a story, Nigel Farage breaking his silence after he was accused by about 20 people of racism as a teenager, saying, and I quote, he never directly really tried to go and hurt anybody. What's that mean? He never directly really tried to go and hurt anybody. Okay, that's the front page of The Guardian. At least we get away from some budget stories. What about, oh, right, the LBC app is excited, we'll move on. As is City AM, we'll move on there, as is the HuffPost. All right, let's go to calls instead. Just over 24 hours to wait for the damn thing. Doug's in Stevenage. Doug, how much do you trust the BBC? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Before I start, by the way, I'd just like to thank you and your station for discussing prostate cancer.
Ah, okay.
I got a result back yesterday from my PSA test.
Yes, come on.
0.87.
Belter. Remember, you want to be below 2 if you're one age, or 2.4, 3.4, whatever. That's a belter, Doug. Congratulations. First test you've ever
Thank
had?
Thank you very much.
Was it the first test you ever took, Doug?
Well, yeah, I've been having getting up in the night for a few peas, men tend to do. But
do you mind me asking your age? What number does your age start with? Just give me the first number.
No, I'm fine with it. I'm 69, mate. I'm 69.
Oh, well, you've got a great reading there. Keep an eye on it, but well done. Doug, how much do you trust the BBC?
Well, I still think the BBC is one of the most brilliant broadcasting companies in the world. I think they do fantastic shows.
Right.
I think their reporters are brave, superb. They make great dramas, documentaries. But what I don't understand, Nick, and this somebody can explain this to me, why they keep saying mistake? These are intelligent people who made a formed decision, to tamper with his speech. It wasn't a mistake. Mm. It was an error of judgment, definitely. But it wasn't a mistake. They made a decision to do it. Why keep saying mistake? And a mistake is when you do something which an error is unforeseen.
I think you're right, and possibly one of the MPs needed to challenge the chairman a little bit more on that. As we now eventually come out of the Trump row and the Bob Villain row and the way that they've treated war in the Middle East, how dented or damaged would you say the BBC is by this?
Well, it hasn't done it any good. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, it's a damn shame, in my opinion, personally, that these things seem to have just rolled on and on one after thing another. But if you take the whole BBC in its entirety all over the world, I still think there's more ticks than crosses against the company, personally.
Doug, well done.
well done with your reading. Look after yourself. Keep an eye on it. You're of a certain age where you are, like me, going to visit the bathroom perhaps a little bit more in the middle of the night than we did when we were younger men. But that doesn't mean we don't keep a careful eye on that matter. In fact, I think we're talking with the health minister later. Just check if we're talking with her. Yes, we are. Yeah, we're talking with the health minister later in the show. We'll see how much closer we are to some kind of screening. Remember, we learnt yesterday, if you did it in bulk, I repeat, if you did it in bulk, it's going to come in about £18 per bloke. Surely there's an argument for that. But that was a little bit of conversation from yesterday that we will move on. This is what you're saying. Thanks again, Doug. This is what you're saying on text and social media. Barry says, I'm 63. Trust fell off a cliff with the BBC a long time ago. Your contributor is wrong and in denial. Mike says the BBC excuses are, at best, flimsy. And Peter says the BBC Verify unit, which they go on and on and on about. Peter says should be renamed BBC Falsify. I worked there for 30 years. This was not an error, an editorial slip, which is what Doug was just saying, actually, Peter. This was, wow, use his strong words. This was mendacious manipulation of the words of the President of the United States, all because the BBC, quotes, wanted, close him, to say something he never said. It's a national embarrassment and won't stop until many heads roll and the licence fee is scrapped. And there speaks almost a BBC lifer, 30 years working at the corporation. It's 7:25. Now let's go to other matters. And ahead of Sir Stephen Watson, who is in the top three of police officers in the whole of the country. It depends whether you see Birmingham or Manchester as the second city. I know if you're in Birmingham, you're going to say that you're the second city. If you're in Manchester, you're going to say you're the second city. So whichever way you play it, he's one of the top three. And he's here taking your calls later in the show. Meanwhile, LBC has been out with Greater Manchester Police, the force of which he's chief constable, as they bid to supercharge their neighbourhood policing models. They've spent the last 2 weeks embedded within an area of Stockport, which has been prone to drug dealing, antisocial behaviour and vehicle crime. Chris Chambers, LBC's North West correspondent, joined them and filed this report.
We are running up the stairs of an apartment block where a front door is about to go through. The officers here, led by Chief Inspector Claire Ryle, are trying to find two people who are wanted for failing to show up to court.
The neighbourhood officers work up here tirelessly. They speak to local residents. They understand from the local residents that lots of them are concerned, and we want to ensure that they see police officers here and they see that we're listening to them and taking positive action.
But it looks like there's nobody here. A neighbour has just shared some information with us to say they might actually be in a different block of flats not too far from here, so we're heading there now.
Hello, police officers.
So when we came in, the front door was actually open. The female who wanted was asleep in the living room, so she's being arrested at the moment. But no sign of the male at the moment. It stinks of weed in here. There is stuff everywhere. There's a big heavy paving flag by the front door as well.
She's under arrest at the moment.
The male who was wanted has actually just shown up while police are inside, and he is being nicked as well now.
What's your name, mate?
And for Inspector Dan Cullen, this perfectly highlights what it is they're trying to do.
The information from the public is exactly what we need. I think acting on that information shows to the public that they can trust us, they can inform us, they can give us that information, and they can have the faith in us that we'll actually act on it. And we've done that today, and we've taken two people off the street who've been causing a number of issues and social behaviour within the block where they live. And I think the neighbours have had enough and have been reported to the police. We've acted on that today, and we've had a success of two arrests and two people off the streets. We'll follow up with the housing now, considering community behaviour orders, considering tenancy warnings, just to make sure that they don't return to that address and pick up where they left off.
Over a two-week period in this one area of Manchester, police have used the full range of tools at their disposal. They've made 15 arrests for things like possession with intent to supply, failing to appear in court, dangerous driving and weapons offences. They've recovered £17,000 in suspected illicit cash, seized 2 kilos of heroin with a street value of around £200,000, and they've taken 12 knives off the streets.
OBC's Chris Chambers reporting ahead of Sir Stephen Watson. He's going to be with us just after 8 o'clock. There's many issues. This is not just affecting Greater Manchester, of course. If you recall the horrific attack on the synagogue, which was last month, we'll try and get an update on that. And whatever happened to the police officers involved in the so-called Manchester airport attack? Do you remember that as well? And also you've got the football player Gary Neville and his interesting views
of when he sees a Union flag attached to any of the building work that he's having done in the city of Manchester. There's much to discuss. It will not just revolve around those issues. There are matters that have spread across the whole of the country. Talking about the BBC, after that lengthy appearance in front of a panel of MPs by the whistleblower, by the chairman, by Sir Robbie Gibb, who serves on the board. This is what you're saying on that. This couldn't be more simple than that. Sabi briefly says, I don't trust the BBC at all. Meanwhile, Martin in the Cotswolds says, leave them alone. I agree the bias pendulum has swung too far and needs to come back a bit, but it's an amazing institution positioned to provide some of the best broadcasting in the world and something to be proud of. I trust them more than any other news organisation, LBC, LBC accepted. Martin in the Cotswold. Gosh, I bet it's cold down there. Enjoy your day today. All right, to other news, and we go overseas with the developments in the Ukraine conflict. White House spokesperson Caroline Leavitt speaking with reporters yesterday about the proposed peace plan to end the war.
I would point any critics to the words of the Ukrainians yesterday, in which they said that they feel very positive about this plan. They've been very involved. They have had direct input on the language of this plan.
But this follows, of course, now a drone strike in the early hours of this morning on Kyiv by Russian forces. Coming back home, you'll hear later in this hour about the idea of trying to drive down NHS waiting times and rolling out neighbourhood health centres. More details from a relevant minister later in the hour. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC, the news read by Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has issued a rallying call to Labour MPs, saying they must stick together and unite behind her budget tomorrow. Speaking to backbenchers last night, Rachel Reeves said that her statement will be a package, not a pick and mix. Ukrainian officials say Russian drone and missile attacks on its capital Kyiv have killed at least four people overnight. Separately, Keir Starmer will host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies later as part of efforts to end Russia's invasion. And the head of the Commons Culture Committee has questioned whether the BBC's chairman can end an impartiality scandal at the corporation. Dame Caroline Dynage says evidence Samir Shah gave in Parliament yesterday was too wishy-washy. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest. Another mild day, a high of 10 degrees.
The budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining, and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means, and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for the budget live and in full as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down. And, of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The budget, tomorrow on LBC.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolux. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to your views of the BBC in a moment. 7.33 is the time. Let's get into the world of finance and business. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. And are we actually ready for takeoff at London Heathrow? Latest details from the front page of the City AM, by the way, Christian May. Christian, what's happening?
Good morning, Nick. Well, we're one step closer to takeoff or taking off from that almost mythical third runway at Heathrow. The government, we understand, is poised to pick which of the two main schemes that had been proposed it wants to back. One scheme proposed by the current owners of Heathrow to build a much longer runway over the M25, and another scheme put forward by the hotel tycoon Surinder Arora for about half the price for a shorter runway. Well, the government, we believe, is poised to say that it favours the first option, the £49 billion plan, as opposed to the £25 billion plan to avoid building over the M25. Now, although those two options represent the two different bids that have made it through to the government is stopping short of saying which of those operators it wants to actually build the project. So it is possible that Surinder Arora's team, which had some pretty heavyweight backing, could now put in a bid to take forward the longer runway, though that might be a little bit unusual. However, it is going to be another row, another twist in this. A lot of the airline groups don't like the way the Heathrow operators run their airport and think that if they are in charge of building its very expensive extension, it will lead inevitably to putting up prices for airlines and passengers. Heathrow would dispute that. We are going to hear a little later, I believe, from Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, who's going to set out a bit more detail about this. But get ready, it would appear, for some fairly heavy building work around the M25.
When? What's the timeline? Do we have any idea of that, Christian?
It's going to take an awfully long time. And one of the reasons for that will be the extraordinary amount of planning, something which we might be discussing in a moment, before any construction starts. So we're looking at years and years, that's for sure.
OK. Let's go to another story. Ozempic might not be just the jab and just the job for Alzheimer's. What's happened there?
Well, the firm behind Ozempic, the weight loss drug, the extraordinarily popular weight loss drug, Novo Nordisk, the Danish firm, had also been investigating whether one of the key ingredients in that drug could slow the progression of Alzheimer's. Now, they have concluded that it's not something that they're going to pursue, that the tests have not worked. And the market responded to that news. They were anticipating, or rather perhaps they were hopeful, that this would be another extraordinary avenue for this company. But that particular direction is not going to be pursued, and the shares fell more than 12% initially in the Danish Stock Exchange to a low that they were last seen in the summer of 2021. So I'm sure that they're going to continue their various tests as to what the sort of ancillary benefits might be from the technology behind these extraordinary weight loss jabs. But for the time being, it's not something they're going to pursue in relation to Alzheimer's.
You've mentioned the following organisation on a number of occasions, and I believe it's something of a darling of the city. I speak of Revolut. For those who are not familiar with what it is and why it is so adored, explain, Christian.
Well, it's not quite a bank. Let's put it like that. They are just waiting for the final approval for their full firm UK banking licence. But they are an extraordinary fintech business. They had a valuation of about $45 billion earlier this summer after some investment rounds. We learned yesterday that NVIDIA, another company behind the AI revolution that we have talked about a lot, has an investment arm and has recently invested in Revolut, which puts a fresh valuation on the business of $75 billion. Now, this company is only 10 years old. It's an extraordinary success story. Its founder, by the way, Nick Stransky, has recently departed these shores in taking a seat on that jet full of extraordinarily successful people that decide they can no longer stay in the country. Nevertheless, his business has got huge roots here and employs an awful lot of people, so it is a great British success story. That valuation, by the way, now means that it is more expensive as a business than Barclays. It is more expensive or valued more than Lloyd's and indeed NatWest. So really quite an extraordinary valuation for a company that has more than 10,000 employees. Many thousands of them will have benefited from this latest valuation because they're allowed to sell the shares they own in this company.
Lastly, And I've asked you so many questions over our time together. Christian May, what is a fish disco?
Well, I mean, it sounds like a cocktail or something, doesn't it? But it is, in fact, the name that was given to a fish protection measure that was planned for the Hinkley Point C nuclear power station in Somerset. More than £700 million is being spent on measures expected to save just under one salmon and about a quarter of one sea trout per year. You did hear that right. The plant will have more fish protection measures than any other power station in the world when it opens because of those strict planning conditions that we in this country seem to love so much. A fantastic, huge, detailed report published yesterday unveils precisely the scale and the intricacies and the red tape around our infrastructure planning systems. And this acoustic fish deterrence around this power plant stand as a very good example. EDF, the company building the plant, found that the measures that they've had to put in place will also save six river lamprey fish a year. There are many other examples of this, including an inshore zone around Cornwall, 20-mile stretch of coastline, which has been given special protection status. So that all sounds perfectly sensible. I speak as a proud Cornishman. That is because there are 15 Slavonian grebes that spend the winter there. And every single development along this stretch of 20 miles, including that of a single new house, must now fund a full habitat assessment survey. It can cost up to about £1,200. It goes on and on. I'm pleased to say that this report was very well received by people who spend a lot of time scratching their heads about the state of our planning system, and we hope that ministers will take it forward, because I can tell you what, I don't like the chances of that Heathrow extension if we continue to tie ourselves up like this.
Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM 740. What a good point Christian makes. We're struggling, and if we're going to get growth, we need those airports to work. We're going to get more planes in and out of Heathrow. So we're struggling. And meanwhile, in all honesty, look, I love animals as much as the next person. £700 million to save one salmon and, what was it, a third of a trout. And we're the only country on the planet with those kind of restrictions. It is utterly nonsensical, isn't it? Are you honestly going to tell me, with all the pressures, think what that would do for the NHS, think what it would do for our children's schools, think what it would do for our road network. £700 million. Anyone going to argue that's money well spent? I thought as much. We might return to that later in the show, but at 7.41, let's come to a story that I've already mentioned, and indeed you've heard some coverage on the LBC News Bulletin. There was, sadly, a Russian drone swarm over Kyiv last night. And you can hear some of them coming in. Journalist Ewan McDonald joins us from Kyiv. What do you understand to be the aftermath? What are we looking at as regarding injuries, or have there even been lives lost? Ewan, good morning.
Good morning. At least two people dead in Kyiv overnight and seven people injured. That's according to Vitaly Klitschko, the mayor. There were also people injured in the south of Kyiv in a town called Bilatserkva, one person killed. 14-year-old girl injured. This was a big attack, and it involved a large number of different types of weapons, from aerobalistic missiles to ballistic missiles to cruise missiles, as well as drones.
What can you tell us about the areas that they actually struck? Residential areas, hospitals, what do we have, Ewan?
We had a couple of strikes on residential buildings, some on non-residential buildings. It could have been either direct hits from drones or debris from shootdowns of missiles or drones. These happen very common. It's very common because when Kyiv's under attack, the air defences have no choice but to try and down these weapons as they come in. Debris often falls on residential buildings because Kyiv is a very densely populated city with lots of high-rise buildings. The attacks, the damage occurred all across the city, from the centre to the eastern to the western areas.
Now, if you go to Washington, the mood music is fairly positive about the chances of some kind of deal. What is the reality as it's seen on the streets of Kyiv?
Well, the deal as it was initially presented was pretty much taken as a Kremlin wish list, and was very disadvantaged Ukraine incredibly badly. It was more likely a surrender deal rather than a peace deal. That's what people here thought. Since the talks in Geneva, which actually started to involve Ukraine fully with the US and with European. The deal that is emerging looks a little bit better, but what people feel here is that as soon as it gets away, the deal starts to get away from being favorable to Russia, the Russians will reject it. So there's not much hope of much progress in the peace process here.
And lastly, what have we heard from President Zelensky as regards the 28-point plan?
Well, President Zelensky was very cautious when he initially responded to it. He gave an address to the Ukrainian people saying that this was a choice between dignity and retaining a key ally. He didn't outright reject the plan as it was given in by the US initially. But it seemed to be basically that he was saying it had red lines across Ukrainian sovereignty that could not be crossed. So we will see how the plan evolves, but President Zelensky himself is under pressure at home from a corruption scandal and also from public pressure here, where people are not prepared to give in to the kind of demands that the Kremlin continue to make.
Journalist Ewan McDonald joining us from Kyiv. Look after yourself, Ewan. Thanks for your input on that. Coming up later in the show, your opportunity to put your calls to one of the nation's top cops, Greater Manchester Police Chief Constable. And of course, there's been some fairly headline-making events on his patch, haven't there? Most recently, the attack on the synagogue, and prior to that, the Manchester Airport attack as well. He'll be here taking your calls. And after that, as Ofcom launches a crackdown on online trolling, speaking ahead of it, Chief Executive Dame Melanie Dawes has said,
for example, female footballers, 29% more likely to get abused than male footballers. So what we're saying today to the tech industry is, here are some really practical steps that we now expect you to take to tackle this.
That's in the next hour. 7:45, LBC News headlines right now. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to stick together and unite behind her budget tomorrow. Renewed Russian drone and missile attacks on Ukraine's capital have killed at least 4 people overnight. And Ofcom has urged tech firms to step up their efforts to tackle the trolling of online abuse towards women and girls. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the M25, clockwise around Junction 5 at the M26. It's after a lorry broke down earlier near the Clackett Lane services exit. It has been recovered, so all the lanes are open, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the M3 northbound to Junction 3 at Lightwater is because a car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. In Kennington, very busy on the A3 Kennington Park Road going southbound where a car has broken down. Delays in King's Cross, Swinton Street has had to be closed westbound from King's Cross Road to Grazing Road, and that's for the emergency works. In Dorking, it's very slow on the A24 going northbound to the Reigate Road junction after an accident. And on the underground, there are delays on the Central, Bakerloo and Hammersmith and City lines.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, we've got a 3-for-2 offer on the best party food. So you can serve fancy Christmas nibbles like lobster and prawn mac and cheese bites, prawn coconut curry donuts, and then do your croquettes with tomato chili jam.
Morrison's, making more of Christmas.
Majority of stores and online prices may vary at Morrison's daily, 176 to 329 grams, £6 each.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with.
From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Trying to brighten with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before 8. Now, ahead of tomorrow's budget, one area, of course, that we feel so close towards. It's almost like the crown jewels, isn't it? The National Health Service. And we're going to hear about new neighbourhood health centres trying to bring patient care closer to home. Let's bring into the conversation to get more details on that. Labour MP and Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health, Karen Smith. Good to have you on board, Minister. Can I start with congratulations to you and your team? I see that the waiting list has fallen after 3 months of consecutive rises, down from 7.41 to 7.39. All right, it might not be as many, but at least it's going in the right direction. Congratulations to you. Well done. How has that been achieved? Good morning.
Good morning, and well done to all the staff and the teams across the country who are making that happen. It is tough. We're seeing those green shoots. They're coming down. They're coming down slowly. And that is good. And part of what we're talking about today is the next step of that delivery about bringing care closer to home with these neighbourhood health centres, stopping people having to go to hospital for very often similar tests and repeating their stories for different conditions that they have, building services around people, not expecting people to fit in with the way the NHS has historically been run.
So how does a neighbourhood health centre work, Minister?
It's like a one-stop shop, I think, is an easy way to sort of explain that. So to stop people bouncing around the system, to bring those services, the staff running those services into local neighbourhoods under one roof. So your GP is obviously your first point of contact. 90% of our contacts are with the GP. So supporting GPs in primary care with other nurses, and other specialists, maybe physiotherapists, pharmacy, all under that one roof. Depending on what the needs of that local community are, bringing other services in there as well, and that will be determined by the local NHS to make them very much part of that neighbourhood.
And are these existing buildings or new premises? How will that work?
Some of them are. Some of them will be refurbished buildings that are already existing, perhaps buildings that aren't being properly used. There are some technical ways in which NHS funding doesn't always work well together locally. So sometimes you've got different parts of the system or the local government that could work better together. So we're making them focus a bit more to use the space that they've got better, but refurbishing some, and then some of them will be new builds.
So they're like super surgeries or mini hospitals in a sense, are they, Minister?
Those are the sorts of concepts, one-stop shops. We want to very much locate them in people's neighbourhoods, though. We want to absolutely transform that sense of you have to go up to these big hospitals for more general care, that you have that care close to home. Most people are, as listeners will know, either older with a number of different conditions or younger people with perhaps diabetes and heart problems. You know, people have got multiple conditions. We know that's what drives a lot of the activity in hospitals and is really drives the waiting list. So having that care focused on you, bringing the services closer to you, using that technology in local areas, that's what we're doing.
How will the sites be selected?
So they'll be primarily in areas of high deprivation because that's where the need is, and that's historically where there hasn't been this investment in local health services, and that will be determined by the local NHS about where they're needed. So very much focused on areas of high deprivation because that's where the health need is.
When will they start opening?
So we hope to have the first, there'll be the first sort of batch are about 120, and those will be over the next 5 years, the first lot within the next 3 years.
And what's the cost level?
Yeah. So we're putting £50 million into what's called the primary care estate. The primary care estate, which normally sort of GP services, has been woefully neglected over many years. So that first £50 million will be part of that primary care estate, and then the rest will be working with the private sector in construction and maintenance of the rest of the buildings in a public-private partnership.
Did you say you wanted 250 of these health centres?
Over time, yes. The first 120.
£50 million won't pay for 250, would it?
It will pay. It will pay for the first batch is 120. The £50 million will be part of that first batch, and then the rest will be publicly privately funded.
But that, if we've got to build, well, that's to build and to staff them. 120 at £50 million. Remember,
that's the construction.
That's merely the construction. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't account for staffing costs.
The staffing will be, obviously, we've got a lot of staff in hospitals at the moment working where people go to. So over time, our conversations with staff will be about the new model of care will be based more locally. And part of that will be staff, obviously, who are working in centralised more hospital buildings. Many of them will be moving into the community. That's part of the new model of care. And obviously, we'll be working with, we've got a workforce plan we're currently working on and working with the trade unions about how that future looks like, as we outlined in our 10-year plan.
Okay. And these are open 7 days a week?
They will generally be open 7 days a week. It'll depend on the needs of the local neighbourhoods.
I can't think of any neighbour that doesn't need healthcare on a weekend, can you?
No, that's right. But some things, for example, in my constituency, we've got a hospital that opens at different times. It complements the large acute hospitals. We will have to look at what each neighbourhood might want something different, but generally across the entire week, the hours to be decided locally by the NHS, depending on what meets the need. The crucial thing is to stop people going unnecessarily to hospital for repeating their story, for multiple tests, making sure that they are treated closer to home. And the needs of each community will be slightly different, depending on what existing service is already there.
I see. So, right, OK. A nighttime opening?
Largely, yes.
What does largely mean?
Well, again, some places might already have something that's open through the night or be closely located to someone.
Well, they've all got, like, general hospitals or infirmaries or something, haven't they? But I think all the help that those very great staff who work in an A&E can be afforded, we'd want to look to do that, wouldn't we, do you think, Minister?
Yes, but the local NHS will determine what the hours of opening are through the evening, depending on what other local services are available. It's a completely different model than we're currently used to.
And this will be touched upon by your colleague, the Chancellor, tomorrow, will it? Will we hear more detail on this, or is this all we're going to learn?
No, we'll be rolling these out across the country, so the Chancellor will talk about that tomorrow, but we've announced that this is what we will be doing. We announced it in the 10-year plan, these neighbourhood health centres, so it's putting more flesh on the bones of those, and the programme will be started to be rolled out from now.
As a Minister in the Department of Health, can I take you to a couple of other areas, most outstanding of which are probably was the news yesterday that David, now Lord Cameron, was discovered to have prostate cancer. Mm. We can all celebrate the fact that he's recovered, although he will obviously need to be carefully monitored, as you'll be aware as a Health Minister. How close are we to a national rollout of a screening programme, Minister?
Well, it is good to hear that Lord Cameron is had that treatment, and, you know, we thank him and other men for raising that awareness. The screening committee, the experts are looking at this. We're expecting to hear from them soon, and then Wes Streeting, and we'll be looking at that very carefully to see what sort of, what the advice is. Screening is complex. We understand the appetite for this now, and the really great way in which many men have come forward to explain what's happened to them. Screening is complex. We need to make sure that that you get the right people, the right type of screen, and we will rely on the experts to come forward with that and looking at it very carefully.
What would it require, do you imagine, to get the go-ahead? Because if you look at the figures, I'm sure you're aware, a programme, if bought in bulk, every bloke could be tested for about £18 per test. You're probably aware that if, unfortunately, you catch it what's called late stage, it's £127,000 per patient. The possible savings are immense, aren't they, Minister?
I haven't seen those direct figures myself, but the issues around screening are about things like called false positives, about unnecessary treatment. So there's another side to some of that equation. That's what the expert committee comes forward to, and they balance all of those issues, and it's really important that we have that public debate about that. And that's what the screening committee will come forward with proposals, and then we look at that in the round to make sure that all those figures are exactly right. You get the right value for money, but you absolutely get targeted support for men with this disease.
Grateful for your time, Karen Smith, your Ministry for Secondary Care at the Department of Health, talking about these 250 neighbourhood health centres that will be rolled out over a period of time. It's not overnight, with the ultimate funding going in the region of £300 million. Thank you for that. Let's just take just under a minute to feature some of the texts, emails that are coming in concerning our conversation about the BBC. Many people out of touch, undoubtedly, out of their jobs, most of them, apart from the, what I suggest, rather hapless chairman, Dr. Samir Shah. If you're in a time of crisis in the broadcast industry, it makes sense to send for a doctor of philosophy who specialises in anthropology and geography. This is what you're saying, Brian, in Glasgow. BBC is finished after listening to that top beat guy at the BBC yesterday. Who gave him his job? Sacked the lot of them. Meanwhile, Jay in Harrow, the BBC, anti-Israel, anti-India, wow, and anti-Trump, but they are pro-Hamas and anyone else who seems to be against this country. BBC impartial, do me a favour. And John asks, why is there this constant pressure on the BBC? No other news organisation has it. Well, that would be, my friend, because no other news organisation is publicly funded. That is the difference. Hence the close level of inspection. You're listening to LBC. 8 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to unite behind her budget tomorrow, insisting she'll be in the job for years to come. Speaking to backbenchers last night, Rachel Reeves said her statement will be a complete package, not a pick and mix. Ahead of the budget, the government's confirmed today the planned rollout of neighbourhood health hubs. Health Minister Karen Smith has just told Nick the aim is to cut wait times in England further.
Crucial thing is to stop people going unnecessarily to hospital for repeating their stories, for multiple tests, making sure that they are treated closer to home. And the needs of each community will be slightly different, depending on what existing service is already there.
Renewed Russian drone and missile attacks on Ukraine's capital overnight have reportedly killed at least six people. Officials say the strikes have left two blocks of flats in Kyiv on fire. Lyubov Petrovy lives in one of them.
I was lying in bed. There was a powerful explosion and glass rained down on me. The window shattered completely, showering me with glass. The entire apartment, everything that was there, was shattered. Putin won't stop until he finishes us off.
Ukraine has also attacked Russia, with strikes reported in two southern regions. Separately, Keir Starmer will host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies later, as efforts to end Russia's invasion continue. The head of the Commons Culture Committee has raised concerns over whether the BBC's chairman can end an impartiality scandal at the corporation. Dame Caroline Dynage says evidence that Samir Shah gave in Parliament yesterday was too wishy-washy. She also questioned whether he has a grip of governance at the broadcaster. The BBC's Director-General and Head of News resigned earlier this month following a misleading edit of Donald Trump. Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims he was racist towards pupils while at school. He says there are huge political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. Reform UK says the allegations are entirely without foundation. And tech companies are being urged to adopt new guidelines aimed at protecting women and girls from abuse online. The communications regulator says no woman should think twice before expressing herself online. Guidance includes bringing in measures such as prompts that will ask users to reconsider before posting harmful content. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 95.35. It closed down 5 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest and another mild day. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do.
Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green.
Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. we're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after eight, Tuesday, November the 25th, and very much to underscore that we're leading Britain's conversation. It's a privilege to welcome here to take your questions, Sir Stephen Watson. Now, Sir Stephen is Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police. This is a police force that serves the second largest city region in the whole of the country, a shade under 3 million people. It's the second largest force in England and Wales, with nudging over 14,000, maybe 14,500 officers, all under the Chief Constable's command. And he joins me now to take your questions, and they're already lined up. But first, if I can, thank you, Sir Stephen, firstly for coming on the show, obviously, and secondly for affording my colleague Chris Chambers to go out with some of your men and women in that operation in Brinnington. And we heard in the first hour report your colleagues, 15 arrests, £17,000 in cash, £200,000 worth of heroin, 12 what are called bladed weapons, cannabis, and 12 vehicles all seized. Chief Constable, my question is, how do you select which areas of Greater Manchester your colleagues will target for these operations? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and good morning to your listeners. So the example that you give in Brinnington is symptomatic of the broader approach that we're taking to what I describe as an altogether more muscular approach to neighbourhood policing. So neighbourhood policing is, of course, it is about being there and doing nice things to nice members of the public, but it is about a very clear-eyed, enforcement-oriented, problem-solving approach. And it's that approach that really gives them the answer to the question that you've just posed, because in order to fully understand how you resolve very often long-standing issues, you need to really nut into the dynamics of what has been going on in an area very often for far too long. And so our initial approach is, of course, to have a ubiquitous neighborhood policing officer. That is to say, we have neighborhood policing teams absolutely everywhere across Manchester. Every ward, every district, every area has a neighbourhood policing team. But in terms of these sort of intensification efforts, we look at places that have been plagued for far too long. So whether that be Cheetham Hill, the counterfeit capital of Europe, as was no more. If you look at Piccadilly Gardens, if you look at Brinnington in Stockport, Durka in Oldham, very good approaches in Rochdale. We see this across Greater Manchester. So we are picking these areas precisely because they've been plagued for far too long, and in some cases, I think people have come almost to accept that things are not very good around here, and that seems to me to be totally unacceptable.
You use the word muscular. As a journalist, I can't think of the word opposite to muscular, but is it your sense that perhaps in too many instances the police have not been on the front foot or forceful enough, Sir Stephen?
Yes, I think so. I think, candidly, when I use the phrase enforcement-oriented, it speaks, in my view at least, to the fact that there's only one group of people in this country get to arrest bad folks, and that is the police. And if we are completely wrapped up, and don't misunderstand me, I'm not in any way disparaging the absolutely essential preventative work that goes into making these initiatives sustainable. These are all part and parcel of the mix. But policing has a unique role within that mix as well. And sometimes I suspect that we've perhaps folded ourselves into the sort of notion that we, like all of our other partners, are just trying to do our best. But we have a unique set of powers, and those powers ought to be vigorously employed in the public interest, which is why, you know, I get that arresting lots of people is not necessarily in itself a measure of good policing. But for goodness sake, if you're not picking up the phone, you're not investigating crime, well, you're not going to be arresting people, which is why we've more than doubled the numbers of arrests in Manchester, more than doubled the outcomes for victims. And it is because we are very, very focused on bringing a rigorous fight to the criminal on behalf of the public that we serve.
All right, let's get to the calls. So Stephen is joining us from the LBC studio in Manchester, but let's get Emma in Burnley through as the first call. Emma, your question to Sir Stephen. Good morning to you, Emma.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Sir Stephen. Question to you. In 2024, a report done by Lancashire Constabulary found that girls had literally been left at the mercy of abusers due to the fact that, you know, I think that as a force, you did literally only scrape the surface of the issue with the grooming gangs. My question is, based on that information 12 months on, where are you with those investigations and how much trust do you have in the supposed inquest that's meant to be done by the government that we're still no further along with?
Just before I vote, Sir Stephen, and here I tell you that in Greater Manchester you have to target areas, just as for the national audience now, Sir Stephen, you obviously know this, places such as Rochdale and Oldham, and earlier this year you were actively investigating 1,099 suspects involving 714 victims. An update to you now, Chief Constable.
Thank you, and thank you for your call, and nice to hear from somebody from Burnley, which is where I started my police career. So nice to hear from you in East Lancashire. What I would say is, look, let me reiterate, and this is the essence of apologies that I have already made, loud and clear. We failed vulnerable people. And we failed them miserably, and as a result, lives were destroyed by predatory paedophiles and people who were preying upon folks for no better reason than they honed in on their vulnerability and made them thoroughly, thoroughly miserable. And we failed, and we, as part of the wider collection of people who should have done better, have to acknowledge that, and we bear the scars very, very fully. What I would say, however, is there is a difference between then and now. If you look at, I can only speak, of course, parochially for Greater Manchester, but if you look, and as Nick has said, you know, we, particularly with Rochdale, with Oldham, Manchester as well, we have had a number of very critical inquiries here. Our failings have been well and truly exposed. And I similarly don't like this language of lessons to be learned because it sounds almost too passive. But the fact of the matter is, lessons have been learned and are baked in to what we do today. You only need to look at Ofsted, HMIC, recent reports into Greater Manchester. This is not just the police, but it's our wider arrangements across Greater Manchester. We are seen as good or adequate across all measures of what effectiveness looks like. And so in the here and now, without being remotely complacent, I am satisfied that our professional practice, both in Greater Manchester Police and across the Greater Manchester system with our 10 local authority partners, is as good as anywhere in the country and better than most.
Well, interestingly, to that point, Chief Constable, if I may, to that point, you are the only yours is the only force that's called set up what's called a Child Sexual Exploitation Major Investigating Team, or CSE-MIT, with around 100 staff and a ring-fenced budget. What has that achieved? Should other forces follow suit? Chief Constable.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that, Nick, because that was then the lead-on point that I was going to make about our caller's, the penultimate question I think that she posed was, how are we getting on with the investigations into those who committed these dreadful acts? And the truth is, we have a number of live operations. We have a number of people who've already, frankly, thought they'd got away with it. They are behind bars. We have a number of people charged, number of trials forthcoming through this and or the remaining part of this calendar year and next year. We have something like 35 people who are ready to stand trial. The fact of the matter is, if you look at the sentences, if you look at the work of our major incident team, you can see that there's real cause and effect there. So we are, not only have we been really assiduous about smartening up our act and making sure that we never fail people in the way that we did in the past, we are also, while simultaneously looking after the children of today, making sure that those who thought they'd got away with it have another thing coming, and many of them are languishing behind bars and will do in the very near future.
In October, seven men were given prison terms totaling 174 years. How many active investigations are going on currently, Chief Constable?
Well, it of course one differentiates between the historic child abuse investigations and contemporary investigations. In terms of the historic investigations, we probably have 8 large-scale investigations, but I'm sure your listeners will appreciate that with these very complicated investigations, you start with an individual survivor and an individual suspect, and then it spans out because you come to appreciate that these were organized, it involved multiple perpetrators, very often additional victims and survivors are then drawn in, and these things, rather Hydra-like, tend to spread, which is why we've invested so heavily, and we will retain that investment and those dedicated people until we've properly cleaned the back of the cupboard here.
And it has been reported that some police officers, not necessarily GMP, have in the past been concerned to investigate some of these claims for fear of being called or being branded racist or racist activity. How do you support your officers and GMP in that area?
Well, the bottom line is if that was ever a motivation for people to fail to do their job, it was wrong then, it's wrong now. Our job is to enforce the law, to protect vulnerable people and to prevent people from becoming vulnerable because of the offences perpetrated upon them. For me, without fear or favour means precisely what it says on the tin.
I mean, Chief Constable, you say people, it's young girls, isn't it, sir? It's not people, it's young girls who have been vulnerable.
Yes, yeah, of course.
They're the victims here.
No, these are young girls who are both vulnerable to begin with, and some of them have been made vulnerable, but all end up vulnerable because of the offences perpetrated against them. No doubt about that.
Let's move on to other calls. Emma, thank you. Richard in Chesterfield, you're through to Sir Stephen. Go ahead, Richard. Morning.
Good morning to you both. Sir Stephen, do you, like me, agree with Gary Neville that the Union Jack and the flag of St George have been taken and used as a symbolic tool by the far right to create division and hatred across our nation?
This is Gary Neville, the former Manchester United and England football player, says it's angry, middle-aged white men, and I quote, using the Union flag. He saw one attached to one of his building sites in Manchester. Chief Constable, what do you see when you see the Union flag?
Well, to be honest, I can see that it has on occasion been used by those who would seek to weaponize it, but I suspect that is a very small minority of people. When I see the Union flag, I feel an immense sense of pride and gratitude for the country that we live in. I am proud of our history. Ours is not an unblemished history, but it is a history that has made a massive impact on the world. And I'm very proud to be British, very proud of our flag, and think that actually we should all, as a country, seize what is ultimately a unifying symbol, and we should all stand beneath it. And, you know, we've just passed through a remembrance services. Millions of men and women cleaved to our flag in defence of democracy and freedom. It was important to them, it's important to me, and it's important, I suggest, to the vast majority of people. So let's not get hung up on this notion of weaponising the flag. Let us all seize the flag for what it stands for and be proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
OK, so quick response from you, Richard.
I agree with the sentiment that, you know, we should all stand beneath the flag, and it's our flag, it's our symbol. But when you see the division and the conflict I've personally witnessed on my street here in Chesterfield, an altercation, the people putting up the flags, not everybody who flies the flag, but the people with the ladders shouting at women, having confrontations when they're being challenged about putting up the flag, and you see videos of them wrestling ladders. I've seen it with my own eyes. Those are the kind of people who, I believe, if they was allowed to, they would fly an EDL flag, but they're not allowed to. So they use a more subtle method, and they use the Union Jack instead. And that's a more discreet way
of getting their message across. Richard, what would your message be to local authorities? I don't know how much has gone in Greater Manchester, but other parts of the country where they've actually instructed staff to take down the flags. What's your message on that, Chief Constable?
Well, it's clearly a matter for the local authorities. Candidly, that has not been the stance of local authorities in Greater Manchester. Your caller takes a particular view and has obviously observed things which has caused him concern, and I'm sure that there are there are unpleasant people who fly our flag, as there are the vast majority of good people who fly our flag. But I do think there is a danger that if we react to a tiny minority of people, that ultimately it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that somehow then flying the flag becomes a bad thing to do, lest it otherwise offends somebody. And I don't think that is at all sustainable. There's a good reason why we have a flag over the House of Commons. There's a good reason why we have a flag when the royal family are not present over our royal palaces. There's a good reason why I have a flag in my office, because right. Actually represents the country that we serve.
Paul's in Worcester Park. Paul, your question to the Chief Constable. Morning to you.
Yeah, hi there. I'm a former Met police officer. Do you sometimes think that internal investigations involving police officers sometimes take far too long?
I think, just say that again, because I'm struggling in London, and Sir Stephen's a little way away now, I mentioned you. Do you think I think you said investigations into police officers?
Yes. I'm a former police officer. I sometimes think that the internal affairs that deals with investigations into police officers sometimes takes far too long, sometimes up to a couple of years. And I'm wondering if sometimes that's caused by being paralysed with fear about making the wrong, maybe political decision.
Let's put that to the Chief Constable. Sir Stephen, your view of the IOPC. There are a couple of high-profile cases going on your patch at the moment, Chief Constable.
Yes, and I think, to be fair to the IOPC, I do think, not least the recent, well, I say recent, she's been in post for about a year now, Rachel Watson, the Director General, has made it very clear that she believes that the IOPC are taking far too long, and it is one of their absolute priorities to speed things up. But I think that is an important priority, because it does take too long. And in certain circumstances, I think that officers who have acted in line with their training, in line with reasonable expectations, even if in extremis they make a mistake, I think it should be assumed that unless there's good reason to the contrary, that officers doing their duty in good faith ought to be dealt with very much more quickly than is the case on occasion.
Well, where are you with the current IOPC investigation into the officers involved with the Heaton Park synagogue incident, Chief Constable?
Well, I mean, I think there, rather happily, there is a counterfactual in the narrative as is put by our questioner, because in truth, I was very gratified that for those who undertook what I think was a first-class, exceptionally professional and brave response to a dreadful terrorist attack. Those officers who, on our behalf, made very, very fateful decisions and acted, I think, extraordinarily well, and I support them entirely.
An innocent person lost their life, Chief Constable.
That is absolutely true, and of course I've made it plain that yes. There are unforeseen and tragic consequences that evolved from this case, but let's be clear, the fault lies entirely with the terrorist in this case. What I'm going on to say, though, is that in this case, the IOPC, literally within 10 days, have, in respect of those firearms officers, already declared that, subject to continuing the investigation, but those officers are not being treated as criminally suspect. They are merely being treated as
But to
as
Paul's point,
witnesses.
We have a continuing investigation, and if I take you to the so-called Manchester Airport attack, my understanding is there's still a police officer under investigation there more than a year on from that. What does it do to the morale of the men and women who serve under you, Chief Constable?
It does not help the morale at all, and I reiterate the point. I think the IOPC are absolutely right to be focused on reducing timescales. There are too many examples of where, frankly, there are some officers who have very clearly misconducted themselves and ought to be booted out. We ought to be doing that more quickly too. But insofar as officers who've carried out their duties and where they can be very quickly discovered to have been acting in good faith, so we need to get them back in the saddle as quickly as possible.
Lastly, when the Met Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, says that episodes such as the one involving Sergeant Martin Blake, he was the Met officer who was cleared of murder but still faces gross misconduct after the fatal shooting of Chris Cabba, he says, Sir Mark, it crushes the spirit of his officers. Is he wrong?
No, he's not wrong. And, of course, he's, I mean, he's right, absolutely right. The bottom line is our officers, and we see this with firearms officers, we see this with officers who are driving to an emergency incident in fast cars. Nobody is arguing that our people should be immune from individual accountability and a professional discharge of their duties. But our people, in responding to emergencies, life and death emergencies, are not doing this in a safe space. They are putting themselves on the line for the public. Right. And sometimes, even when people behave faultlessly, these inquiries go on interminably. Okay. And sometimes, where things have gone not brilliantly, but there's no culpability, they also go on interminably. And I think we need to draw the balance better between discriminating between those officers who've let the side down and the vast majority of officers who are doing a brilliant job on behalf of the public, and they deserve our support.
Let's take the next call. Suz is in Manchester. Go ahead, speak. You'll put your question to the local chief constable. Good morning, Suz.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm just, again, in regards to Piccadilly Gardens, like this, it looks like the streets of San Francisco. I'm just wondering if there's going to be any enforcement or anything planned to tackle that going on there.
Okay, just to explain from my knowledge, Seuss, thank you. Piccadilly Gardens is very much the sort of centre of the city. It's where the tram operates from, and most of your big stores are, if I've got that right, Sir Stephen, just to allow other listeners across the country, if I'm painting the picture right. Chief Constable.
It is, you're quite right. It's one of those rather unpleasant 60s sort of pedestrian thoroughfares, which is not very pretty in truth. And it does attract an awful lot of antisocial behaviour, drug dealing and the like. We have, this is ongoing work, is the bottom line. We have put a number of resources into that area. There's a standing neighbourhood team of 18 police officers recently made their 432nd arrest. We've cleaned up drug dealing gangs. We've cleaned up elements who were seeking to exploit young women in that same locality. It is a place that is...
Is that what I would know as prostitution, Chief Constable, or attempts at prostitution?
Well, no, these are people who are soliciting people who are merely wandering about the place, going about their lawful business. So, no, these are people seeking to exploit good folks. We are working on this. We're working on this very close with Manchester City Council. There is a very substantial, we're talking seven-figure plus investment plan, because some of the solution here is just changing, reconfiguring the environment, open spaces, better surveilled, fewer places to hide and to make yourself invisible to passing patrols. We'll continue with a clear hold build type policy, same as we did with Cheetham Hill, Durka, Brinnington, the stuff we talked about earlier.
Yes.
We're really, really ruthless about it. And just as a last point, it is unfinished business. It's not where we need to be. But the idea that any part of Manchester is like San Francisco gives me heartburn.
Let's go to the next caller. Mark is in Lee. Mark, your question to the Chief Constable. That's Lee in London, sorry, for everyone else, South East London. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Chief Constable.
Yeah, your question.
Hello. I just want to find out, in regards to what took place in Birmingham in terms of policing football fans coming from Israel. Now, assuming... Manchester United or Man City are drawn against Maccabi Tel Aviv, and their fans want to come over and cheer their side, as you know, it's normal with football fans. Would you be utilizing the same sort of methodology that your East Midlands counterparts used or not?
It's actually, just to correct, it's actually West Midlands, but the question is a very, very live one. Maccabi Tel Aviv get to play at Old Trafford or against Manchester City. How would you police it, Chief Constable?
Well, to be fair, I think banning things is problematic. I think we would.
Is it wrong?
We would. Well, I'm not going to second guess the operational decision making of colleagues. I do know, of course, there has been a question mark over the provenance of the information.
Well, it seems to be fake news, if I may use that expression, Chief Constable. They seem to have doctored findings from a game against Ajax in Amsterdam. That's what Dutch authorities are saying.
Well, I don't know that that is true, Nick. All I know is that that is a question that has been raised. I'm entirely confident that the chief will be fully across the information that went into the safety advisory group where that decision was then made. But frankly, it's not for me to second guess their.
Okay,
their
but what if Maccabi Tel Aviv did come to my Manchester
that,
team?
That I'm happy to deal with. If they were to come to Manchester, as with, you know, clubs from all over the world all the time, I think banning generally is problematic, both practically and tactically. For the most part, we would simply police the match in accordance with the intelligence picture. That is to say, if there was good intelligence, as there frequently is, that there was a problematic crowd, we would scale up our resourcing and we would police it accordingly. And
so the game would go on. The fans would be able to go and watch the game go on.
That would be our default position. Yeah.
Can we talk football? Football clubs pay, as I think it's somewhere around £70 million cost of policing at various games. Your colleague in London, Sir Mark Rowley, says that he would like to see more come back from Premier League teams. You have two massive Premier League teams. You have other teams, by the way, in your patch as well. But you've got United and City. Do you know how much it costs you? And do you think there should be more coming from these extraordinary rich football clubs?
Yes, I mean, we certainly estimate that the amount that we spend each year beyond that which we can recover, i.e. the net cost to the public of Greater Manchester, just for our big Premier League clubs, is about £3.5 million a season. So that is handy money when you haven't got it. It does seem to me that there's a really good case. My colleague Mark Roberts, who is the football policing lead, he's the chief constable of Cheshire, has been making this case very assiduously. He's made it very compellingly, I think, to government. I'm pretty sure in the Home Office they are listening to his case. But I think across policing, we are subsidising Premiership football clubs to the tune of about £28 million per annum. I think that is the cost beyond that which we can recover. I think there's a very good case for us to be able to recover more, such that you know, we can obviously bolster the resourcing that we have to look after everybody else in our city region as well.
Last minute together, let's put to you some questions from the email. Pam in Worcester Park, the Met has stopped deploying officers to non-crime hate incidents. Other forces are possibly doing it as well. What's the GMP, Greater Manchester Police position?
Well, you'll know that I was one of those who called for a review into non-crime hate incidents. I do believe that the policy of investigating non-crime incidents, hate incidents, has brought us into conflict. There is too much of a conflict between.
So are GMP officers still investigating them, sir?
Well, we're not investigating anything that doesn't constitute a crime. We're very clear about this. We have a very rigorous approach to, we will investigate all reasonable lines of inquiry in respect of all allegations of crime. Where we have something that is patently not criminal, then we will not deploy officers to investigate it. But what I would say is that we do need to be cautious. There is a review ongoing. That review is shortly to publish, and I'm pretty sure that we will move on from the current situation, and we will obviously embrace that when we get to it.
Right.
But in the meantime, what I wouldn't want to do, I am no defender of this notion of policing hurty words and fluff and nonsense on social media, particularly that which people are lawfully entitled to put forward. But we also need to recognise that sometimes the online space is used to harass people, to perpetrate domestic abuse, to perpetrate fraud, and we've got to be a little cautious that everything in the online space, it can't automatically be assumed not to be a crime. So we've got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Lastly, front page of the Metro newspaper today, 1,000 abuse victims are safer. This is abusers who have been handed tough new protection orders. I read that Greater Manchester Police is one of the lead forces in a pilot scheme. Can I get a word on that from you, hopefully your colleagues or you've had side of this, Chief Constable?
So I haven't seen that particular article, Nick, but it will relate to the so-called domestic abuse protection orders. Yep. We are a leading force in this regard. It's a crucial set of tools where you have court-backed orders, where we can properly get stuck into perpetrators. We can keep them firmly on the back foot in the protection of people who they are repeatedly victimizing. So it's a great tool to protect people, to protect victims going forward, give them that comfort that they sometimes otherwise lack. And where we've been able to apply these orders, where people then breach the order, the courts are being really good at properly whacking them as a result. And that is always good for the soul.
Chief Constable, thank you for coming to the Manchester studio. Will you ever come to the London studio as Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police? Sir Stephen.
The future can look after itself. Nick, at the moment I'm paid for by the great people of Greater Manchester, which, as you know, is the UK's second city.
Would you ever want to have a promotion to the UK's biggest city, Sir Stephen?
I've worked there before. I love my time in London.
Firearms.
But in the meantime, I'm here in Manchester and very proud, privileged and honoured to be, sir.
I won't talk to you beforehand. Have a happy and safe Christmas. My best wishes to all your colleagues who work so hard to keep the great area of Manchester safe. Thank you for your time. Sir Stephen Watson, Chief Constable of Greater Manchester, appearing here on LBC. Take us to 8:33. News headlines.
The Chancellor has issued a rallying call to Labour MPs, saying they must stick together and unite behind her budget tomorrow. Speaking to backbenchers last night, Rachel Reeves said her statement will be a package, not a pick and mix. US officials are set to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. Renewed Russian drone and missile attacks on Ukraine's capital Kyiv overnight has reportedly killed at least 6 people. And Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims he was racist towards pupils while at school. Reform UK's leader says there are huge political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest with a high of 10 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whether it's education, you literally don't know what the right thing to eat is. And I've got to be honest with you, I find that kind of hard to believe. Whether it's the fact that you're all working so hard, you haven't got the time to meal prep. There is a very, very clear link between poverty and obesity. But only really in the Western world. Why?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah. It was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:37 is the time, running a little bit late after that conversation with the Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police to prove, of course, that we are leading Britain's conversation. And hopefully you learned some things about that. Now, let's come to other matters. And it would appear the nation is going cold on heat pumps. Fewer than 100,000 were installed last year, meaning the United Kingdom is now operating at 1/6 of the required pace, because you may recall that figures put out by Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, and his team say we should be getting a 600,000 100,000 a year within a couple of years' time. We also need to train at least 10,000 new installers a year to meet targets. And data with the industry shows, even assuming strong year-on-year growth, the 600,000 a year target will not be hit until the mid-2030s. I'm informed by conversations I've had with you. If you have had a heat pump fitted, and they are considerably expensive, how happy are you with it? And could there be a more timely moment to have this conversation than right now, where certainly in this part of the United Kingdom, I can't speak for the whole of the country, but my goodness, I'm afraid we have had to reach for the thermostat and turn the heating up because it's getting brutally cold. So why would it appear you're not particularly warm to the idea? Dave Souden is CEO of the Sustainable Energy Association. How would you characterise the take-up of heat pumps to date? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for inviting me. Well, first of all, I think we should say that the growth that we've seen in heat pump sales so far in this country is unprecedented. The numbers surged by 54% in the first half of this year.
From what? From a low base, though?
It is from a low base, right. And we are way behind our competitors in Europe. That's partly due to sluggish policy being introduced. So the previous government was quite late to bring policy in. This government has been promising us the so-called Warm Homes Plan, which was a manifesto commitment to upgrade 5 million homes. Since it came into power, we still don't have that. We are not sure exactly when we'll have it. The budget may be a key milestone in getting there. But the heat pump market is growing, and it's continued to grow this year, and that growth has accelerated. So whilst I think I would probably agree with your assessment that the 600,000 target, which incidentally was a Boris Johnson target, I don't think this government has restated it. I think that is now looking very precarious indeed. Nevertheless, we are seeing accelerations in sales.
It's one newspaper, the Daily Express, who has the exclusive background and figures to this. They say the average cost of an installation comes in at around £12,500. Is that a figure you recognise, Mr. Souden?
That is the figure that the government reports from the grant scheme, the boiler upgrade scheme. And yes, it remains the case that heat pumps are more expensive to install in a retrofit environment, that is. So for an existing home, we are taking out a gas boiler and replacing it with a heat pump. Part of the reason for that is because there are what we call ancillary costs. So for a heat pump to work efficiently, you may need to change one or two radiators, sometimes more. Not in all cases. A heat pump will work perfectly well with many existing systems, but the important thing is that an assessment is done by the installer at the time. And part of the reason for that is because we made a change in policy 20 years ago, and we brought in so-called condensing boilers, high-efficiency boilers. And when that change was introduced, we didn't go the whole way and make sure that the rest of the system changes were addressed so that those boilers could operate efficiently. So your lovely gas boiler that's sitting in your airing cupboard or wherever it is, the chances are that it's not operating particularly efficiently because when your old boiler was taken out.
£12,500, is it? That's the difference. Isn't that why, in the most recent survey, only 19% of homeowners said they're thinking of actively installing a heat pump when they need to replace a boiler? That's fewer than one in five.
Yeah, I can understand. I can completely understand that. While the upfront cost remains relatively high, and we've got some work to do in bringing that cost down. But I think it is important to say that over the last 20 years, we have not been installing boilers properly. We've been installing them safely, but we have not been addressing the changes that are needed to the old radiator here and there to make them work efficiently. So your gas boiler, which should be running at 93, 94% efficient, so you're only wasting 6%, 7% of the energy content of the gas, is actually only operating at 84%. So a lot of energy is being wasted.
You mentioned my boiler and other people listening to this, Mr. Souden. My boiler is roughly the size of a large suitcase. A heat pump, if I'm the one I'm looking at a photograph in the paper today, that's the size of a small car trailer. Well, I'm always going to go for the smaller object, aren't I, rather than having this bolted onto the side of my house, taking out half the garden.
Well, heat pumps are larger than boilers. That is correct.
They're more expensive, and I understand they can be quite noisy. Apart from that, I wonder why people aren't buying them.
Well, the noise dimension is a myth. Modern heat pumps are no less. In fact, they're even quieter than boiler flue. So that's incorrect. But if we are to make this transition away from fossil fuels, which we need to do, we do have a law that says that we have to do it, notwithstanding some of the politics around that. It's in the country's interest from an energy security perspective and from a homegrown energy perspective to move away from fossil fuels. And the less we use gas, the less we are exposed as a country to international political drivers, such as the Ukraine war, which is largely responsible for the hikes that we saw in the gas price recently. The electricity price remains stubbornly coupled to the gas price for the time being. That's because we still use too much gas to heat our homes and for electricity generation. And the only way that we get out of this in the long term is by moving away from imports of fossil fuels, dependency on the international gas price, and using homegrown electricity from sources like renewables and nuclear to power our own country. And in doing so, the electricity price will eventually come down. Heat pumps become a much more attractive proposition when that happens.
Lastly, I don't know where you live. The part of London in which I live, we're having a lot of what I call tower blocks or apartment blocks being put up. I genuinely don't know. Presumably, you can't have one heat pump do a whole apartment block, can you?
Well, an important point to make is that heat pumps aren't suitable for every building. They are a good solution where you've already got an existing wet central heating system, as we call them. But
sorry,
where you've
why
got
is it
quite
wet, pardon my ignorance,
because water flows through the radiator.
It's the
heating of that water that distributes the heat around your home.
Yeah.
When you have that sort of heating system, then they're a pretty good solution. But if you've got dense housing, particularly new developments, then I think in London, actually, the vast majority of new developments go in with something called district heating, where you've got a central heat engine and then the heat is distributed around an estate or around a building. So heat networks are more appropriate for those circumstances. Right. Equally, there will be homes where a heat pump isn't always the most cost-effective solution.
I will leave it there, Dave Southern. Thank you very much. Only for time reasons, thank you, sir. You're CEO of the Sustainable Energy Association. I've got to try and get back on the clock after having spent extra time with the Chief Constable. Thank you. How efficient, if you've got one, a heat pump? £12,500, probably double what an installation might be of gas, but of course you're helping save the planet. Rob, you've got one. You'll tell us exactly what they're like after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to stick together and back her budget tomorrow if they want to win the next general election. US officials are set to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. And it's understood the government will outline more details later over its backing of a third runway at Heathrow Airport. LBC weather dry and bright for most, some showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M20 westbound to Junction 8 at Leeds Castle. It's because of an accident and those delays are about 3 miles long. Also severe delays in Carshalton on Acre Lane. The road is blocked now because of an accident. This is right near to Park Lane and there are huge delays on all approaches. In King's Cross, very busy because Swinton Street is closed from King's Cross Road to Grazing Road for the emergency works. And on Homerton High Street, there are restrictions both ways. This is also after an accident and as a result there are lengthy queues. On the underground there are minor delays on the central line eastbound and also both ways on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's Airalo.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can just switch off.
where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields, or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before nine, taking on the online trolls. More on that with the boss of Ofcom in a minute or three. But Rob in Hamburg, interesting enough, has been hanging on the line. The United Kingdom is going cold on the idea of heat pumps, if indeed it was ever that warm. Rob in Hamburg, how do Germans view the installation? Have you got one? Good morning.
Good morning from Hamburg, Nick.
Guten
yes, exactly 5 years ago, my wife and I bought this two-bedroom bungalow. It's about two bedrooms, 90 square metres. There's just the two of us. Admittedly, it's a very modern, high-energy, low-energy house.
Yes.
But we pay for all our heating and hot water €50 a month. That's now settled down over 5 years, €50 a month.
But you've probably got great insulation and other matters.
Yes. Of course, it's not just one thing. You have to have a good roof. You have to have, it helps if your walls are well insulated, good windows.
Yeah.
There are a couple of myths which I would like to dispel.
Go ahead.
It's not noisy.
Okay.
You do hear it when it's working, if I'm in the bathroom, which is just outside the bathroom in the garden. It's not obtrusive or uncomfortable at all. And size, it's the heat exchanger, because it works basically like a fridge in reverse. The heat exchanger is the size of two suitcases.
Yeah, it's chunky though, isn't it? I mean, I don't hear my boiler, it's the size of one suitcase. Actually, it's the size of an average suitcase, not a huge suitcase either.
Well, because you've got to put it somewhere, but what we just plant around it. Like I say, it's a fridge in reverse. It blows very cold air out through part of its normal operating procedure.
Yeah.
So you have to pick some bushes that can withstand cold air, and after 5 years, nobody can see it now. But it is very, very good. Now, some friends of ours have got an older house and are having a heat pump installed. That is a different kettle of fish altogether.
Tell me why. Tell me why.
Well, all the radiators have got to be replaced with underfloor heating pipes.
Oh.
And
so all the doors
have got to be shortened. But if you're a young family and you're looking long-term, people do it. In Germany, there are grants and financial help.
Did you say the doors have to be shortened?
Well, because they've got to dig up all the floor, and then they've got to lay pipes in scree.
It's just easy to get some log fires. I mean, this is absurd.
You're not allowed to use those anymore, Nick. They're old hat. But, yes.
Do you think that Germans are more early adopters in this field than perhaps we Brits are?
Yes, we are. Well, I say we, I'm still a Brit.
Yeah.
They are streets ahead, and mainly because of the grants and financial help available. And until very recently, the last coalition government no longer allowed gas or, above all, oil heating.
Oh, When you say they didn't allow, you mean you couldn't install it new?
Yeah, but that's all gone pear-shaped, and we've got a new government, and that now is all going to be discussed. So that pushed things on.
How cold is it in Hamburg today?
Important thing with the heat pump. Yeah. You can't just buy it, install it, and use it. Okay. It has to be maintained every year to make sure it's running at optimum efficiency. Okay. That costs me €300 a year.
All right. How cold is it today outside in Hamburg?
Oh, it's about 3 degrees and the heating's not even going.
Get that heat pump going. Eric Vielen Danke, auf Wiederhören. Rob, I've got to get a speed on. Thank you for that. Enjoy your time in Germany. 8 before 9 is the time. Tackling online trolls. New guidance from Ofcom demanding practical action. Let's get more details now from Dame Melanie Dawes, who's Chief Executive of Ofcom. Good to see you and good to hear from you again, Dame Melanie. Spell out in simple terms that people like me can understand. What is it you and your colleagues are putting into place today? Morning to you.
Good morning. Well, what we've done is talk to loads of people out there who understand what it's like to be online, particularly as a woman, where you're more likely to get abused and trolled than men. It isn't just women who experience that, but they're more likely to. And we've set out today a set of very practical and common sense steps. It's things like being able to report when you're being trolled multiple accounts all at once rather than doing them individually, which takes forever. Bundling all the privacy settings in one place so that you can be confident, particularly if you think you're vulnerable to being stalked by somebody, you can be confident that they're all switched on. It's things like nudges, so that if someone's about to post something, you know, really nasty and aggressive, they just get that reminder, are you sure? So there's a whole load of stuff that we're suggesting, and what we're going to do is hold the tech industry to account on this by publishing really, really clear reports for the public that say who is bothering and who isn't, because this is all very simple stuff. It's not rocket science, and we don't really think there can be any excuses on this one.
What sort of organisations or groups have you sought guidance from, Dame Melanie?
Well, we've talked to a lot of sporting bodies. We know that women footballers are 30% more likely to be abused than men. Again, men have experienced it as well, but it was even more intense for the Lionesses this summer. We've spoken to women's refuge organisations who really understand what it's like for those women who want to stay online and connect with their friends, but they're really worried that their ex is going to find them and harm them and their kids. We've spoken to journalists, politicians, many, many different groups who've just given their perspective and said what they want and need. And a lot of this, as I say, it's not rocket science. It's not about curtailing anybody's freedom of expression. It's practical stuff that, frankly, the tech industry could have done a while ago, but it's taking regulation to push it through.
More broadly, on the subject of trolling, can I remind you of the case of Jay Slater? Now, Jay Slater, to remind you, was the 19-year-old man who went missing in Tenerife a couple of years ago. Mm. Sadly, he'd ill-advisedly taken drugs and alcohol. He tried to make a 14-hour walk back to the villa, and his body was found almost a month later. Hopefully, you'd remind. There was a lot of trolling of that, as there was of the Nicola Bully case, Dame Melanie. Well, that young man's mother, Debbie Duncan, is going to be with my LBC colleague Sheila Fogarty later this afternoon. She's talking about the introduction of Jay's Law to stop grieving families from being abused online. I appreciate this is the first you've heard of it, but if I could get a word towards Sheila's conversation later today. Dame Melanie.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm so sorry that this is happening to people who, in their most vulnerable position, where they've lost somebody and they know that the worst could have happened, that then somehow there are people out there who think it's appropriate to go in and troll them. To be honest, Nick, I don't really know how people can do that and how they can sleep at night when they're doing that. It's extraordinary. I think we'll be very interested to see what she's suggesting by way of Jay's Law. I think what you've
and you're open possibly to some of your colleagues meeting with the mother.
Definitely. We talk to a lot of people who've had experience like this, whether they've lost somebody online or whether they've been victims themselves. So we're very happy to talk to her about it. You've always got to balance making sure you don't stop people's freedom of speech on this. That's always the balancing act. But, you know, very interested to talk to her.
Well, you are always attempting to be ahead of the game at Ofcom. I have a final question for you. My colleague has intimated to me that you were quite interested in our conversation about heat pumps, because you're an early adopter there. You and I have talked about many things down the years, Dame Melanie, but I've never asked you about your heat pump. Would you recommend them? And if so, why? And if not, why? Melanie.
We've never talked about heat pumps before, have we, Nick? What a shame. Now's the moment.
It is.
Look, I have got a heat pump, but what Rob was just saying, I think, is spot on. We've got the insulation, we've got the underfloor heating. It was already there. Makes a huge difference. I wouldn't put it in an old drafty home, unless you were doing a total refurb. But when you've got them, they do work.
They do. All right. Are they noisy?
Well, you know, the heat pumps are usually outside, so it's not inside the house. You probably need that bit of room in the garden. I loved Rob's planting tips for making sure that you plant things that can tolerate the wind. Maybe we can talk about gardening one day. That's my other passion, Nick.
I look forward to that. The next time you're on, we'll talk gardening. Dame Melanie, thank you. The serious, of course, matter that we were discussing, practical action against online, particularly the trolling that affects women and young women, some of whom are engaged in sport. Dame Melanie Dawes, Chief Executive of Ofcom, thanks for your input. 349. Hey, Christine Eads, I think heat pumps are very noisy. Can you imagine the row when you're sitting in the garden and everyone has one chugging and banging away? Well, hopefully that's the heat pumps, nothing else. Jenny's in Horsham. Are they noisy? Yes or no? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I wanted to support what you said. They are absolutely noisy.
Right.
Noise is relative, depending on where you live.
Yep.
And quite understandably, my rather elderly neighbour reported me to the council. The council wrote to me. They didn't actually do anything about it. And when we could afford to, we've upgraded it to a quieter one, spent a lot of money.
What's a lot of money?
Well, they are several thousand pounds, but we've spent extra money on insulating an area. Now, we each have a half an acre plot.
Oh, right. Wow.
So it is relatively quiet, but we do have an A road in the distance that you can hear. But it's an annoying hum, so we didn't want to fall out with our neighbour. No. We did what
can
we
you
could.
Hear the hum inside the house?
No, but most of the time, if you've got a garden, you can hear it outside, yeah. And that's where there are problems. I can't hear it, hold on, but he could hear it when he was in the study with the window open.
Yes, okay.
And that's where he worked. So, that chap, the so-called expert, we have to be realistic if we want people to adopt to this technology. They are amazing, but you've got to have a lot of money to pour into the latest.
Jenny, did you put the fitting in, or was it a home you bought and it was existing?
No, we put it in.
Any regrets, or are you glad you did it, lastly?
Many years ago. Well, it's very expensive. And, we've been here a long time. We're not going to get our money back.
You're not?
For a while.
All right. I'm grateful to you, Jenny. Thank you. I do think this noise is a relevant issue. Thank you for coming on the line. Talk about noise and music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, truancy fines. No, to the local authority that instead is going to give you empathetic awareness courses for parents. What on earth does that mean? Plus, raising a red flag over Black Friday. Some of the deals are nothing more than a con. And disco, but have you ever heard of a so-called fish disco? If you haven't, we're spending £700 million on a fish disco to save one salmon a year, whose name is Fred. No, the last bit's not true, but the other is. It's that much cash. 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Chancellor has told Labour MPs they must stick together if the party wants to win the next general election. Speaking to backbenchers last night, Rachel Reeves said her budget tomorrow will be a complete package, not a pick and mix. Some Labour MPs have been critical of her handling of the economy and a series of leaks in the lead-up. Paul Novak is the TUC's General Secretary. He's told LBC it needs to be a budget that puts money in people's pockets.
One in six workers are skipping meals because they can't make ends meet. We know there will be people listening to this programme, and millions of people up and down the country, who won't switch on the heating this winter because they're worried about paying the bills. And so that's why I think we need the employment rights bill delivered in full, but we also need a budget that delivers for working people and on living standards in particular. And whether that's action on energy bills, lifting that two-child benefit cap, practical action to boost the minimum wage.
US officials are set to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. Renewed Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, overnight has reportedly killed at least six people. Keir Starmer will also host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies later as efforts to end Russia's invasion continue.
It's understood the government has backed Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving the M25. Ministers have reportedly rejected a cheaper alternative that would have avoided moving the motorway altogether. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander is expected to outline more details in the Commons today. Plans for the £49 million expansion were approved earlier this year. Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims that he was racist towards pupils while at school. He says there are huge political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. And Ofcom has urged technology firms to step up their efforts to tackle the online abuse towards women and girls. The communications regulator has published new guidance as part of its plans to combat hate and misogyny. Head of the regulator, Melanie Dawes, has just told Nick what steps that she wants to see companies take.
It's things like being able to report when you're being trolled multiple accounts all at once rather than doing them individually, which takes forever. Bundling all the privacy settings in one place so that you can be confident, particularly if you think you're vulnerable to being stalked by somebody, you can be confident that they're all switched on. It's things like nudges, so that if someone's about to post something, you know, really nasty and aggressive, they just get that reminder, are you sure?
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 25 at 95.60. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest of England and another mild day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Oh. So, off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage?
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Tuesday, November the 25th. Just 1 month to go. Meanwhile, this local borough, how are they tackling school truancy, pupils who do not turn up? By offering parents empathetic awareness courses. How exactly do they work? Plus, the red flag over so-called Black Friday. Have you, like me, been deluged with advertisements, not just on the radio, in the newspapers, but also on your mobile phones, on social media? Well, the red flag is a lot of those Black Friday deals are just one big con, so says Which, that organisation. And to the weirdest story of the day. Anyway, I don't know about Disco Inferno, a nuclear fish disco costing £700 million to save one salmon. Look, salmon perfectly, I prefer it grilled, but I like animals as much as the next person. But £700 million to save one fish, measures not seen anywhere else on the planet, ahead of the budget, give me a break.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Can I talk to you about parental responsibility? We tackled two stories yesterday. Do you remember that I think it was, in a way, one of the most distressing stories we've done, apart from health, obviously, and horrific stories when people get murdered or beaten to death by their parents, whatever. It was a really distressing story. The high number of children arriving in primary school unable to speak, unable to hold any form of conversation, absolutely wizard on the screens, they can swipe, they can't speak. I thought that was appalling. And you may recall also yesterday, we talked about figures obtained exclusively by LBC, 250,000 children leaving primary school either obese or on the verge of obesity. What is the parental responsibility? And you and I have clashed so many times over where I think we are going wrong. In that we now have very well-meaning people, and I'm not angry with them or indeed, but we have people now who go into schools to show children how to brush their teeth and how to wash. Who taught you to brush? It's not a teacher's job to teach your child how to brush his, her teeth. It's also, by the way, not a nursery school. What do you call it? Year arrival, nursery, your first year of primary school, whatever it's called. Arrival year, I don't know. To teach them effectively how to cope without a nappy. The lack of parental responsibility is breathtaking. I think in part COVID played a role here, in that everyone stayed at home and you didn't have to go to work and everything was much more laissez-faire and the child didn't go to, or children didn't go to school. Now we learn a school has replaced £160 fines with empathetic awareness courses. It's the Neckley Primary School, it's in London, asking those in danger of a fixed penalty notice for a child's absence to attend four sessions on the consequences of missing school. Head teacher Gareth Morris says the approach was inspired by speed awareness courses offered to motorists, for those you aren't aware. If you are a first-time offender or you haven't had an offence for a number of years, and it is a relatively minor offence, it is very dangerous to speed, but if you're doing, I don't know, 48 in a 40, and you haven't had an offence before, you can do an awareness course. You still pay the fine, but you don't take the points. Now, the school's reporting dramatically improved attendance in children whose parents have attended, but charities are urging caution, saying the scheme could damage relationships between parents and schools unless properly implemented. Question. Unless you were an habitual offender, an habitual truant, where did you learn about the need to go to school? I would imagine, as it was in my case, mostly mum, because dad was at work, but dad would have been there too if required. Mum and dad suggesting it's quite a good idea to go to education. So do we really need these courses? Paul Walton is acting head teacher of All Saints Catholic College, a state secondary school also in London, in Kensington, joins me now. Could you ever see the day when you and your colleagues would explore the opportunity of empathetic awareness courses? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
At all.
I do think that Gareth, the head teacher where you mentioned, he does have a point in terms of engagement works far better than the big stick of fines. We've seen that ourselves. We've had some challenges, as all schools have, at the end of COVID. You know, the genie's been let out of the bottle. Children being at home with their parents, parents maybe working from home. It can be a comfier arrangement rather than having a battle with children to get them into school. So I do think engagement is more effective. We've seen that. But I think it's got to be a multi-pronged approach to getting children in. I think there is, for rare cases, there is a use for fines. We do use them occasionally, sparingly. But if I think about the biggest thing that's had an impact on children attending at school, it's been a sense of belonging. How do we make children enjoy school? And let's face it, you know, school's the slog at times. Mm. If you've got double physics on a Thursday morning and it's January, sorry, physics teachers, that's not necessarily going to get you out of bed and into school. But what is going to get you into school is if you know in 4 or 5 weeks' time you're going off to the Natural History Museum or you're going to go on the Olympic cycling track and cycle around the velodrome. They're the sort of things that hook you in. Or if you know you're going to be making paper aeroplanes in a competition at lunchtime and flying them against your teacher, they're the things that sort of build bonds and relationships with staff. And you start to see that people care about you. So I think if you can, you've got that rich kind of wide-ranging activities after school, before school, you've got great relationships with staff and staff show that they care and invest in you. Children see that, parents see that. And the other thing is, I do agree about the awareness. You know, we bring parents in at the start of every year. And one of the things we always talk about...
Well, every parent or just year nine?
We invite every set of parents in at the school at the start of the year to frame the year. What's important about this particular year for your child? And one of the things we always stress is the impact of absence that it has on children, particularly at the end of year 11. And you can see the impact it has, you know, students who
GCSE,
just miss temper.
It's
huge. So we're really trying to spell out that, look, you're going to miss out on vital things. You're going to miss out on really fun and enjoyable things. But the impact when you leave is going to be enormous.
But does it not frustrate you and your colleagues sometimes? You'll be aware, Mr. Walton, there are countries on this planet where The idea of free education is a dream. There are children who possibly walk two and a half hours to school in the morning, and they walk two and a half hours back, and their parents insist they do it. Here we have great sets of teachers like you, like the teacher you mentioned, Gareth Morris, and they struggle to get parents to send their kids to school. It's extraordinary.
I totally agree with you, and I think they're the sort of conversations I've had with my own children about how fortunate we are in what we have. But I think there's a battle on that our parents didn't have, Nick, and it's around mobile phone use and screen use.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned just before about the effects on obesity and not moving. You know, mobile phones are hugely damaging to children. We've done a lot of awareness around that at our school. In fact, we brought in an extended schools programme where we invited children in to have breakfast with us, stay and do their homework, then do a fun activity, and then have an evening meal with us. So they were here till sort of 6, 7 o'clock
Wow.
to help get children off their screens and interacting and socialising and developing that oracy with other children that you also mentioned.
All right. Well, you've got a great bunch of colleagues then. They're prepared to put in that kind of shift. Paul Walton, always enjoy speaking with you. I have to go. Thank you. You're acting head of All Saints Catholic College, a state secondary school in Kensington, London. Listening, Jonathan Forster, who's an educational consultant and former head of Moreton Hall, one of the nation's highest-achieving independent schools, joining me now. Same first question. Can you see value in the so-called empathetic awareness courses? Morning to you.
Well, I can. I mean, the previous speaker and his colleagues obviously do an amazing job. I mean, what a huge amount of time they spend. And obviously, it has a positive effect. But it seems to me that most schools just wouldn't be able to do what they do. And you've got to ask the question, do the schools, should the schools be doing as much as that? Shouldn't parents understand that education is vitally important for their children?
To me, it seems extraordinary. I don't know whether because my mother and my dad would have done, insisted I went to school. It's whether because I had two brothers who were actually quite high achieving. It was never a matter of debate for me. So how has it even entered the equation, do you imagine, Mr. Forster?
The school, I just quickly read an article in the Daily Mail this morning, and I think the school is in Camden, which is a very mixed area. So there are quite a few what you might call middle-class people, but also there are quite a lot of people who've just recently come to the country. There are people who've come from different backgrounds, different and had different experiences. And I think that is one of the problems there, that perhaps some of the parents just don't understand that education is, in effect, almost the be-all and end-all. With education, you can climb the ladder. Without the education, you know, you're down the snake. And it's just something that hasn't got through to people. So the schools have to do something to get parents to understand that education is incredibly important. But on the other hand, penalties sometimes need to work. And we know about speed awareness courses. I have to own up to having attended one or two myself, and they do work. They do work. I'm a much more careful driver than I used to be. And I think that, you know, that kind of approach is also very valid as well. But, you know, it's a mixture of carrot and stick. And I think, you know, that some schools will have to wield the stick to get people to understand that they have to get the kids into school.
Finally, the C word, COVID. What was the impact, do you believe, in the field of education?
Massive. I think I heard what you said before, and I totally agree. The parents and the children were at home. It was easy for the parents to give in to the kids. The kids were on screens. The teaching was on screens, if there was any teaching, and the kids didn't really have to do it. So everybody took, and most people took, the line of least resistance, because parents often were still having to work and trying to get your kids, you know, young kids, 10, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, into school is very difficult. And now we are reaping the whirlwind of that. These are the children now doing GCSEs and thinking about leaving school, and they perhaps just haven't developed the habit of working and getting up in the morning and doing things independently without being told that they have to do it.
Jonathan Forster, you're an educational consultant. You were head of Moreton Hall, one of the nation's highest achieving independent schools. How did you get the discipline of going to school? Are you a teacher? If you are, the frustration you must have, you're working really hard and working really well with the pupil. He, she seems to be getting it. And then suddenly they don't turn up for 2 days or whatever it might be. But empathetic awareness courses, is that the way forward? We'll look at that. Plus, for my colleagues, because it gets them up and moving around a little bit, the favourite story of the day. Yes, I'm going to be telling you more about a nuclear fish disco, explaining how it works and trying to work out, or trying to get to the bottom, of how it costs £700 million at Hinkley Point C Nuclear Power Station. 9:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
US officials are set to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. It's understood the government's backed Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway despite concerns about moving the M25. And the Chancellor's told Labour MPs they must stick together and back her budget if the party wants to win the next election. LBC weather dry and bright for most, showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 is closed westbound between junctions 9 at Ashford and 8 at Leeds Castle. It's because of an accident and there are severe delays on the approach. Long delays in Homerton, the High Street remains closed both ways, and in Carl Shorten, Acre Lane is closed in both directions following an accident, and that's also causing severe delays. Very busy in King's Cross, Swinton Street is closed from King's Cross Road to Gray's Inn Road for some emergency repair works. In Wood Green, the road works on Turnpike Lane. So these are the temporary traffic lights at Whiteman Road. They're also causing severe delays. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo, the Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines.
LBC.
The EasyJet Black Friday sale is now on. Get up to 10% off flights. Long weekend in Florence, anyone? Or maybe a ski trip to Switzerland. Plus extra offers throughout the week. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates. Sale ends 11 p.m. the 2nd of December. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
At this time of year, we know you're snowed under. But with Halfords' biggest ever Black Friday sale, you handle the shopping, we'll handle the saving. Grab up to 50% off our motoring and cycling must-haves, including tools, in-car tech, bikes and more. Whether it's Christmas gifts, everyday essentials, or just an excuse to treat yourself, we've got you covered. Pop to your local Halfords today or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Tackling truancy, awareness courses in empathy. Zoe's in Oxford. Zoe, I think you are a teacher, or you were a teacher. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I was a teacher, and now I work with children who are chronically absent from school.
Oh, how interesting. What sort of age range do you work with, Zoe?
It ranges from 9 years old up to 22, for children who, young people that aren't able to even access colleges that are able to kind of provide care for them.
That must be such challenging work.
Yeah, it is. It's challenging, but it's really, really important. You know, I think that for lots of these children, you know, a lot of the reason they're unable to access school is because they aren't getting the correct special needs provision at school. But also for a lot of them, their parents are, you know, were victims of the school system not having enough funding for many years. And they are completely disenfranchised from the education system, and they didn't feel supported or helped by schools. So
that's an interesting word that you pick. In what way are they victims, Zoe? Give me a bit more on that, if you would.
Well, I mean, the school system since, you know, early 2000, 2004, 2005 has been sort of consistently had its funding removed and reduced. And so teachers weren't given adequate support to support children. And so that means that as they've kind of entered into adulthood and tried to enter the working world, they haven't received all of the support they needed, like, for example, speech and language therapy at a young age that can really support children in their ability to enter the working world when they're older. And so once they have children, they don't believe that their children are going to get that support either. And so they sort of...
How do we break this vicious cycle or circle?
Well, I mean, there's a lot that needs to be done. Fundamentally, families need to be supported better socially at home. Parents need to be, I mean, poverty is a huge issue, and that causes chronic stress in households and makes parents unable to manage children a lot of the time. And there just needs to be better support for parents in the community to help
them.
What
does that better support look like, Zoe? Break it down a bit for me.
I mean, it looks like community centres, youth centres for children, youth clubs for children, more of them.
Hang on, we're trying to get them to get to school, aren't we? You're not trying to get them to youth clubs as well, are you?
Well, yeah, but I mean, motivation for parents to feel like your children are being looked after.
But is it not, I defer to you because you, is it not the first wish or drive or passion of any parent to want the best for their child or their children?
Absolutely. For most people,
so don't they see the
that?
Value of, therefore, even if they weren't particularly crash hot at school themselves, don't they think, well, the way my son or daughter or sons and daughters, the way they're going to get on is to go to school because I want better for them than I've got for myself. Surely, isn't that the most basic human drive with kids, no?
Well, yeah, I think that is the most basic drive if your experience has been that has worked for you. I think for a lot of people, if that system hasn't worked for them, then they have lost faith in the system. And so it means kind of, it relates to what you mentioned earlier about COVID. I do think that having children be out of school for a long time and children seeing their parents at home, that obviously made them think that being at home is normal and is okay. And then for parents, they've seen that maybe their children were less stressed when they were at home because obviously they're not being made to do as much stuff. And so I think for some families, they just feel that their children coped better when they weren't going to school, and they're nervous about what will happen when they go back to school.
Zoe, good luck with the work you do. Really challenging, hard graft. I hope it goes well for you. Thank you. Josh in Brighton. Josh, how do you respond to what we've heard from that young woman who's working in this field? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think the courses are a good idea. Because I think a lot of parents need an education on parenting, really. Because my daughter, in my experience, I'm not with her mother anymore.
Right.
And sorry, anytime, thank you. Anytime my daughter says that she doesn't want to go to school, her mum just folds. And I think it's I think it's to the point that you mentioned on the last call where you'd expect the parents to want the best for the kids, but I think some parents just want to do like the quick easy fix to make the kid happy, and if the kid doesn't want to go to school and they think it's going to make them happy to not go to school, they're just caving.
Are you able to talk to your ex about this, or does it get a bit testy?
Oh, it does, yeah. So she last year was her first year of school, and she missed on average one day a week.
She can't go on like that with her school career, your daughter.
Exactly.
Your ex-girlfriend, partner, wife, whatever it was, did she do well at school, or did she not really engage in her school years?
No, she didn't really, but neither did I, to be honest.
Oh, really?
But through life, you sort of understand the importance of it a lot more than you did when you were a child.
Yeah, right,
So what you should do is explain to your child why it's important and why they need to go to school. And any time I've done that with my daughter, she's trotted into school happily and had a great day. So.
Lastly, a parent's empathetic awareness course. What merit might that have in your eyes, lastly, Josh?
I think it's as long as it's an education for the parents on why it is so important for the children to be going to school, because I mean, a day a week that my daughter missed last year is 20% of her school year she's missed.
Yeah, well, as I said, you can't do all of that. Josh, stay in touch. Let us know how you get on. Tricky area, I understand, of course, if it's with your ex. But let's hope she does see the light, because that girl's not going to have a chance, poor kid, if she doesn't go to school. She misses only just 80% of the work. All right, a conversation I never thought I'd have concerning a fish disco. With more than £700 million being spent at Hinkley Point C nuclear station on environmental measures, unlike any seen anywhere else on the planet, which are predicted to save 0.083 salmon or 0.028 sea trout a year. There are other fish that will be saved. 6 river lamprey, 18 Alice shad, 528 twait shad, or whatever it might be. The cost revealed in a review by John Fingleton, a former chief executive of the Office of Fair Trading. The review used listed a litany of mitigation measures that exceed the actual level of risk. The fish disco operates, but simply, with noise and flashing lights that tries to dissuade the fish from moving into this area where, sadly, they would lose their lives. But £700 million? Can that level of expenditure in any way be justified? Jonathan Porritt is an environmentalist, former senior advisor during the Tony Blair government, and also former advisor to King Charles, and joins me now. Are you going to support that level of expenditure, Mr. Porritt? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm going to support that level of expenditure, Nick, as you can imagine, not least because EDF's figures and the figures on which a lot of this sudden fracas this morning is based are completely inexplicable to people. I mean, there have been numerous analyses done of exactly how many fish would be affected by these huge intake pipes drawing water into the Hinkley Point C power station for to help with cooling. And EDF itself, early on in the process, talked about 2.9 million fish every year being killed as a consequence of being caught up in the cooling water intake. So these figures are extraordinary. They are contested completely by every environmental organization involved in the Severn Estuary. And the calculation about the amount of money per individual fish is therefore close to, I don't quite know the polite way of putting this, but basically absolute rubbish.
Absolute rubbish. Okay, so you challenge all these figures. What about Natural England? Are you aware of their inshore zone of the sea from St Austell to Gribbin Head, 20-mile stretch of coast in Cornwall, a protection area because 15 Slavonian grebes spend the winter there? If, as I'm sure you agree, for your children or your grandchildren, if you have any, if this country is going to grow again, we're going to have to get grown up about this, aren't we? And so, unfortunately, some grebes might have to perish.
I guess it suits some people to pitch these individual cases in such polarised terms, Nick, and I know you're only trying to wind me up. The truth of it is that we do have to protect the natural world. We are absolutely dependent on the ways in which those natural systems continue to support our economy, the human economy. And every now and then, in order to make those protections work, money, real money, does have to be spent. There's no question about that. These costs are often massively exaggerated to suit the pro-growth brigade, many of whom now dwell at the heart of this particular government. They're usually exaggerations. They're usually taken out of context. Overall, we're one of the most nature-depleted countries in the whole of Europe. And yes, we will need to spend money in order to protect the nature, which ultimately we depend on, even if in certain short-term cases it's a tricky trigger.
But this report, unless you want to challenge these figures, did show that this country spends more than any other on the planet for these mitigating measures. I agree that we obviously shouldn't just go randomly and merrily killing animals willy-nilly, as it were, but there has to be a degree of fiscal reality, doesn't there? 700 million quid. Think how many nurses that would buy.
But 700 million quid as a one-off for a power station which will operate for at least 40 years, killing millions of fish every year. So you have to, sorry to get technical on you, Nick, you have to amortize that 700 million over the lifetime of the power station, at least 40 years, in order to work out what the total benefit will be from a conservation point of view versus the capital expenditure up front. You've got to get more economically savvy than this, Nick, if you're going to have a proper debate about it.
A brilliant case, cogently argued by Jonathan Porritt, environmentalist, former senior advisor during the Tony Blair government, former advisor to King Charles, putting the case for this, disputing those figures put forward by this gentleman, and painting a very different picture. So how are we going to smoke out the truth about that salmon story. We'll take your calls on that. It's 9:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the news from Dominic Ellis.
Senior American diplomats will meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as efforts continue to end the war in Ukraine. Renewed Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital Kyiv overnight has reportedly killed at least six people. It's understood the government has backed Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway despite concerns about moving the M25. Ministers have reportedly rejected a cheaper alternative that would have avoided moving the motorway. And the Chancellor has urged Labour MPs to stick together and unite behind her budget tomorrow. Rachel Reeves told a meeting of backbenchers last night it'll be progressive but has warned of difficult choices. LBC weather dry and bright for most, showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
The budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining, and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means, and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for the budget live and in full as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down. And, of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The budget. Tomorrow on LBC.
Shop Black Friday right now at AO. Hundreds more deals have just been added on washing machines, laptops, hair care, and more from brands like Hisense, Asus, and Dyson. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Shop deals now at AO.com. Hey, oh, verify most trusted at AO.com/trust.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Oh, yeah?
Keep the extra guests entertained this winter with EE TV.
So I can watch all me crime dramas?
While the rest of us have the football on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, TNT Sports, and Discovery Plus. All powered by EE's ultra-fast full fiber. Sign me up. Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams, please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online, or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming up, a case of buyer beware, Black Friday. Well, red flags are raised by which it can be one big con. I want to hear your bargains. Real black, you've bagged a Black Friday bargain. Or, unfortunately, have you been had over? Come to that in just a moment. Now, yesterday we were talking about prostate cancer in light of the news that Lord Cameron had been diagnosed but has been successfully treated. Of course, now he'll always need to be monitored or observed. He's 59, by the way, just to put you in the rough, some contextual background. And it was discovered as part of his routine MOT, as it were. You might recall that we took this call from Steve in Surbiton, who would be undergoing a new form of treatment yesterday. Steve is 61.
About a year and a half ago, I had a prostate test, and there was nothing there. And then 14 months later, they found cancer. So this afternoon, I'm in the Marsden.
Right.
And I'm going to have a session radiotherapy. It's a new thing they're doing. This afternoon they're putting gold into my prostate, so the rays, when it goes into the prostate, stays within the prostate. But to be honest, I don't know what's going on, because ever since I've got this, I've been chatting to all my mates and stuff like that, and two of them have got prostate cancer.
Well, it's not every day you hear someone saying that they're going to have gold put into their prostate, so if you were listening, you may recall that I said, would you give us a call? And he has very kindly spoken to one of my colleagues, and he's not going to come on the line. Here's what he says. I'm a little bit sore, but I'm doing okay. The painful bit is today. They put four, or was yesterday, they put four pieces of gold in the prostate as big as granulated coffee. My goodness. I mean, the beans, obviously. Goodness me. Next week, I'm having a CT and an MRI scan, says Steve. The following week, I'll start five rounds of radiotherapy, and it used to be 20. Steve goes on, everyone moans about the NHS, but my experience has been that I got such a fast service. Within 8 to 10 weeks, we'll all be over and done with. I've told two friends, and they've been diagnosed with prostate cancer since. And Steve says it does feel almost like an epidemic, is the point he made. Thanks for letting us know about this sport. I'll leave you be today. I'm sure it is a little bit uncomfortable down there, but you're taking it on, and you're going to win. And I'm sure that treatment, having gold there, will absolutely magnify and make it even better. All right, let's talk about truancy. We're talking about, want to hear your, have you had a Black Friday bargain? Are you scouting around for one at the moment? My wife, it's still strange to say that. My wife loves a bargain. So she's looking all the time at the moment. But that's after we talk. Raj is in Weybridge, been hanging on the line to talk about truancy. So we have a school in North London that, instead of handing out fines, £160, wants to hand out courses. What merit does that have in your view? Good morning.
Good morning.
Raj, go ahead.
Course has people like me, whose parents moved countries, turned their world upside down because they understood the value of education. So these parents need mentors, maybe. They need examples of the value of education. They need to understand it doesn't matter where in the world you are, education is the way forward. Mm. And I think we're missing that link.
But why? Why are we missing? That's what I don't understand. Why are we missing that? It seems so damn straightforward to me, Raj.
Because I think, this is just my opinion,
sure.
I'm the first female in my family to have access to education.
Do you mind asking where your family came from? You don't have to answer.
India. No, from Punjab, India.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're Punjabi Hindus from Punjab.
Yeah.
They moved here not because of money, but because my mother, very strong woman, not around anymore, made the decision, thank you, the females, everybody needed access to good education, not just the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of 11, and all of us have honoured our parents by going to school. When we were little, we could not be 1 minute late for school. We had to do our homework. We weren't allowed to do our homework in front of the TV. And we had very strict guidelines on the value of everything in our life. And I think
Your mum and dad were so rigid on that, Raj?
Because they saw around the world, even though they couldn't read and write, hugely intelligent. And that's the other thing. It is not the A's and the B's and the A stars and the university course that make you intelligent. It's this process that we're going through about life. And having the education adds a level to have access to jobs, to life, to everything, that if you don't have that ABC, it's going to be very, very difficult, yeah?
I agree. So why doesn't the light bulb go on for more parents?
Do you think it was the fact that
they were immigrants to this country? How crucial was that?
I think that just gave them another level of understanding of the value of education.
Yeah.
And I think the people here, you know, and there's a whole series of families. Right now, my husband and I sponsor education programs in India, in Ethiopia, where we adopt our little baby from.
Mm.
And we understand the value of education, both my husband, who happens to be white British, him and I. And it's interesting that until I met him 32 years ago, he didn't quite understand the value of education, but today he runs a global consultancy. Up until I married into his family,
right,
I don't think they recognised, and members of his family to this day think, oh, Raj's mum and dad gave her money. No, Colin and I did it from minus zero ourselves, and we've enjoyed that journey, and we did it through education.
Lastly, parents listening now who are thinking, oh, it's cold, and kiddie, my daughter doesn't want to go to school. Oh, I'll just let them have the day off. What would you say to them briefly, Raj?
Absolutely not have the day off. This is life. Get with the program. Get in that car. Get outside and walk to school this second.
Good luck to you, your children, and to your husband and all the work you're doing, Raj. Thank you. We'll have more on that. But let's go to other matters. Black Friday just around the corner. Relatively recent invention. But one organisation is calling the red flag over Black Friday. It's Which? Rob Lilly-Jones is consumer expert with Which with which, and whom is with I could go on. And he joins, where is he? With which, whom, where? And he joins me now, Rob Lilley-Jones. Okay, what is the reality you and your colleagues have found out at which? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. So, as you say, we've been doing an investigation into this. Over the course of the last year, we've compared the price that products are on sale for during what we're calling the Black Friday sales period, because it's not just about one day anymore. No. So this is the 4 weeks leading up to Black Friday and then on Black Friday itself. And what we found is that actually of the 175 products that we looked at, 83% of them were the same price or cheaper at other times in the year. And none of them were actually cheaper on Black Friday itself.
Are people just getting caught up that they're actually hearing or seeing what they want to hear or see, and then, okay, I'll buy this TV, I'll buy this washing machine or whatever it might be?
I think it's understandable, isn't it? Because we're bombarded with emails, with all sorts of, you know, sales on TV, all sorts of adverts. And we're really not happy with the behaviour of some of the retailers, because what we're seeing here is they're manipulating RRPs, so recommended retail pricing, to make discounts seem better than they are. So what they're often doing is they will inflate the price of a product just before Black Friday, and then maybe in the week itself, they'll then bring it down again. But actually, that will give them the opportunity to say, you know, oh, we've discounted something by 30-40%. But actually, that isn't a true reflection of the price that product was sold for at other times in the year. I mean, one example, Nick, which is the one that really stood out to me. So a Samsung TV, it was £1,039 on Black Friday. Mm. But if people had waited till the next day, it was then £999, so £40 cheaper. Mm. But then it was another £250 cheaper the following January.
Good grief. So if you can save off and go without telly over the Christmas period, you'll save 300 odd quid or something like that, roughly speaking.
Well, exactly that. Just sit the radio on and listen to LBC.
Listen to LBC.
It's obvious.
Okay, so how do LBC listeners, how do you know whether you're being duped or whether you got your hands on a real bargain?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things we'd absolutely recommend. I mean, the first tip is obvious, do your research, but there's a few different tools you can use online. So there's a few brilliant websites. I mean, there's one called Price Runner, there's another one called Price Spy, and another one with a quite bizarre name, Nick. It's called Camel, 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 but I promise you, it's a legitimate website. And what you can do on there is you can put in a specific product that you might be searching for, and then what you can do on the website is you can track that price over the course of the year, and you will see at what times in the year that product has been cheaper, or, you know, the different price it's been sold for. For example, you know, I mentioned TVs earlier on, at which we find that actually March, April is a really good time to buy a TV, because that's usually the time that the new models come out. So if you just want to wait around, you can buy a model that's only a year old. You know, the technological advancements aren't that big, yeah, and you can get a really good deal.
Rob, thank you. The brilliance of that name is the one that's stuck in my head is Camel, Camel, Camel. The others have just kind of sailed past. Rob Lilley-Jones, consumer expert for Which? Thank you for that. We'll take your bargain calls, or have you been duped and your fury? I might share some more prices with you, by the way. It's not just as washing machines as well, where you've got to tread very carefully. We're talking a fish disco, £700 million for a fish disco. It's a disco in that there's a music and flashing lights to deter fish from, this is very pretty graphic, effectively being sucked into the turbines of a nuclear, the Hinkley Point C nuclear power station. Jim is in Winchester. You're going to argue that this is money well spent. Is that correct, Jim? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm not necessarily going to argue that. I mean, it sounds, the way it's headlined there, it sounds like they're just getting a brief disco, a brief dance before they're chewed up. What I would like to highlight is, regardless of these sensationalist headlines, it is absolutely imperative that the plight of the wild salmon is kept in the newspapers, and it might be in less than a positive light on that particular headline, but this is a species that is endangered. It was officially confirmed as endangered in December 2023, and it's a keystone species, indicated species to our rivers. We're losing it at an alarming rate. It's a very important species. So £700 million, £70 million, £70, whatever it is, money and attention and awareness does need to be given to this fish.
Jim, you're passionate about this. A colleague has told me that you started something called Activist Anglers, and you're also senior in River Action, so I realise that it floats your boat, ha ha ha. But a lot of people would say, is this man mad? £700 million, think of the teachers, think of the nurses, think of whatever else. How would you respond?
Well, I would say I would probably agree with them. And that's a huge, huge capital I there, if it's true that only one salmon or 0.0083 of a salmon, as it says, it's so brilliantly brilliantly stated in the papers today, salmon are saved and it's costing $700 million to do so, I would perhaps say that's a disproportionate amount of funds going to that cause. But again, I would take that with a healthy dollop of salt. But it is imperative that with the new infrastructure and development bill that's being pass through, that we do think about the species that are endangered, you know?
We've got to think about salmon. You're an activist angler, that's your organisation. When you catch, do you always return? Or if you've got a big, healthy
absolutely.
Salmon? So even if it's day before Christmas and you've got 20 people coming around the house, you're still going to put the salmon back in the water?
Well absolutely, because for the most part, it's illegal to be taking wild salmon out of the rivers and killing. Yeah,
because, my ignorance.
So I don't want to spend Boxing Day in prison.
In jug. No. Those people who are struggling, I know this man's voice. Come on, Jim, tell everyone who you are.
Who I am?
Yes,
I'm Jim Murray, I'm an actor.
Yes,
I've been in various things.
You were in The Crown, Mr. Murray, weren't you? Who did you portray in The Crown?
I played the artist formerly known as Prince in The Crown.
Is that going to stay on your CV, you played Andrew Mountbatten
Windsor? That might drop off depending on who's looking.
Oh, you've made a very serious... Go on.
No, go on, carry on.
I was going to say, do you want to make a serious point about activist anglers? Did you want to sort of put people in touch with? Because there will be people who sympathise.
Not so much about from an angler's point of view, just from a conservationist point of view, these wild salmon, which are incredibly rare, we've lost 75% of the species in as many years due to all sorts of things, climate change, but most predominantly man-made issues in our coastal waters and in our rivers, and we can reverse the decline. But I would urge people to do some Googling on the wild Atlantic salmon, how precious it is, and how perhaps they might want to think again before they buy farm salmon this Christmas.
Look after yourself. Good speaking with you, Jim. Best wishes to you. Thank you. And what you're trying to do there. Taking us to 9:48, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
US officials are set to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. The government's confirmed it's backing Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving the M25. And the Chancellor has told Labour MPs they must stick together and back her budget if the party wants to win the next election. LBC weather dry and bright for most, showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 is closed westbound between junctions 9 at Ashford and 8 at Leeds Castle following an accident. And traffic is just being held eastbound, and that's whilst the air ambulance lands, so there are severe delays both ways. In Homerton, the High Street remains closed in both directions because of an accident, and that's causing lengthy delays on the surrounding routes. Also delays in Wood Green because of the roadworks on Turnpike Lane. And in King's Cross, it's very busy because Swinton Street is closed from King's Cross Road to the Grazing Road. And that's for the emergency repair works. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Metropolitan lines and minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Stratford and Shenfield.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
It's not really a mansion tax if you live in the South East, but is it fair? And which politician do you think stands accused of racism or similar by 20 former school friends?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
The autumn budget is an important moment for small businesses. And while they are experts at overcoming challenges, many need extra support to thrive. That's why Simply Business is launching the Big Dreams Project, a pledge to help 10,000 small businesses by 2030. Through cash grants, sharing entrepreneurial know-how, and hands-on volunteering, Simply Business is helping small business owners access the support they need to succeed. To find out more, search Simply Business Big Dreams Project.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit more about fish, the fish disco. Luke French says, no surprise we spent the most on wildlife protection when we let water companies pump sewage into our waterways. Mikey says, on the issue of this disco, I'd like on balance to hear about the engineering and environmental reasons this is being put in place. Agreed. You don't want fish ending up in the coolant water intake. Definitely not sure what that would do. And I'm sure you do not want them wandering around on the fuel rods. Think what would happen if they jumped up, and the moderators as well. You're obviously a bit of an engineer, but I hear what you're saying. You don't want them gumming up a nuclear. It could be quite frightening if they did do all of that. We're also talking about the school in North London that if pupils don't attend, rather than fine the parents, they offer them awareness courses. Steve in Hayes in Kent. Will the parents get empathetic courses if they refuse to attend the empathetic courses offered to them because their children refuse to attend school? Next, maybe empathetic courses for coercive partners who forcibly break the neck of their partner, leaving them disabled. The society's justice system has become a joke. This comes from... I just wonder, you don't always read... Oh, here we go. Mark in Powys has given me his name. Seems like more of our taxes go towards increased maternity and paternity leave. Parental responsibility is declining. It's disgusting. Well, bear in mind, of course, this is actually saving parents money. I would imagine... I should. There's no note as to who does it. It is the teachers who sort of go and above their daily work to provide those courses. But let's talk Black Friday. Daniel, coming to you in just a moment. We heard the example, and of course, it's not a Friday. It's not one Friday anymore. It's effectively a 4-week period. I'm sure your social media, your internet, computer's messages have been flooded, as mine have, with all sorts of bargains that I could have, none of which I'm interested. We heard from the gentleman from which, Rob Lilly Jones, television at £1,039. If you wait a couple of months, it's £749. Let me tell you about the Eco Bubble washing machine, priced at £399 on Black Friday. The day after that finished, it was £369. One other example let's give you here. A Dyson extra stick vacuum cleaner, I don't understand, was £349 during the Black Friday period. But guess what? It was £249 the day after Black Friday. Have you been caught out? Daniel in Southend. Daniel, have you been got a bargain or have you been had? Good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to speak to you, Nick.
Good to have you on, sir.
It was interesting hearing Rob speak about Camel, because I sort of discovered that
never
for myself.
Heard of it. Tell everyone what it does again. It sounds fantastic.
It's basically a way of checking the prices of products throughout the year, sort of thing. So you can ascertain whether or not you're getting a good deal at the time of purchase, you know, if indeed you are choosing to purchase it.
And
at
does
that
it cover
time.
Everything or just Amazon?
Do you know what? I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've certainly used it for Amazon. And it's because of Amazon that I am sort of aware of this, because I noticed this probably a good few years ago, speaking to my partner about something that I was looking to purchase. And I'd had it in my basket, looking at, you know, a price on it.
Do you mind me asking what it was?
Do you know what? I genuinely can't remember. It was quite some time ago, but I noticed that in the lead up to Black Friday, the price had increased. You know, obviously I didn't question it too much. You know, prices do increase on products, only to find that come Black Friday, it had reduced to its original price again. And again, I didn't question it too much at this point. You know, I'm like, okay, well, prices do fluctuate. Purchased the product, only to find that after I'd purchased it, the price had dropped back down again significantly.
Right.
And it was at that point I said to my wife, you know what, maybe there's something in this. And I've made it a point of, you know, kind of on the lead up to Black Friday, having a look at bits and pieces that I'm, you know, looking to purchase, looking at their prices, watching those prices rise significantly, only for it to come back to its original price come the Black Friday sales.
So your advice would be, aside from camel, just tread carefully, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a case of, you know, kind of looking at, you know, looking at the prices at various different points. You know, you might be looking at something that you consider to be a good deal. You know, maybe if you're not in such a rush to grab that item, to, you know, to keep an eye on the price.
And lastly, have you targeted anything for this Black Friday period, or you're keeping your wallet in your trouser pocket at the moment, or jacket pocket?
Funny enough, I'm looking to stock up for Christmas on some nice booze. But again, I have noticed the prices of these fluctuating. I think I'm just going to wait until the Black Friday sales are over.
Daniel, a savvy shopper from Southend. Look after yourself. Thanks for your input on that. Let's get the last minute or so to Kimberly in the Wirral. Back to this issue of truancy. Parents not really having that much interest in educating their children. What would you say to them? Good morning.
Morning. I think the biggest problem that I'm seeing, I've got a 13-year-old and a 21-year-old, and the biggest problem that I see is that friends of my younger child, that I'll have parents saying, oh, they refuse to go to school, they refuse to get out of bed, and it seems to be the thing that the kids are kind of ruling the roost rather than, I mean, my son will say, I don't get any choice, I have to go to school, and that's...
What about when you were young, mum or dad, would they have allowed you to possibly, would they have entertained the idea, I don't want to go to school today, it's cold, or something?
Absolutely not. I'm not saying my kids are exactly the same, apart from, there's been two occasions that each of them have been sent home where they've woken up and said, oh, I don't feel too well, and I say, right, get your uniform on, I'm sure you'll be all right once you get into school. Mm. And there's been two occasions over all the years that they've been actually sent home. Apart from that, they stay in school, and by the time they come home, they've forgotten that they don't feel that well.
Well, the deal always was with my mum, go to school. If you feel bad, go to the nurse. She'll ring me. It was a she. I'm sure there are male nurses. And I'll come and collect you. And that deal always seemed
exactly
to work well
that.
For me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. If you're not well, school will send you home. But by the majority of the time, they're absolutely fine and they've forgotten all about it. But
well said. Kimberly, well done. That seems like a pretty engaged mum. Look after them. You had the last word. I'm done for the day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and am I interested in tomorrow's budget? The first budget in history that I've ever been remotely interested in has not diminished at all. If anything, it's increasing. I'm beginning to understand why the rest of the media goes into frenzy mode whenever a budget is coming around. It's really, really interesting. But is there a danger of every phone in sounding the same? Yesterday, it was the turn of pensioners to say, oh, not me, Gov. Although, actually, a rather uplifting amount of people got in touch to say, no, I should actually probably not be getting as much as I get. And today, it's people in big houses, or, I suppose, if you're in the southeast, expensive houses. Form an orderly queue and tell me why you shouldn't be paying a little bit more tax by dint of owning a massive gaff.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, senior US officials are to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. Renewed Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, overnight has reportedly killed at least six people. Sir Keir Starmer will also host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies later as part of efforts to end Russia's invasion. Former Russian diplomat Boris Bondev says the Kremlin is content to let Ukraine's leader do the talking.
I think Moscow is quite satisfied watching this from distance, waiting for something to be presented to it. So Moscow would make the final choice, what to agree on, what not. It puts Putin again and again in a position of strength.
The government's confirmed it's backing Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving the M25. Ministers have backed the expansion and insist it'll comply with legal, environmental and climate obligations. The £49 billion project should be operational by 2035. City AM's editor Christian May is following developments for LBC.
It is going to be another row, another twist in this. A lot of the airline groups don't like the way the Heathrow operators run their airport and think that if they are in charge of building its very expensive extension, it will lead inevitably to putting up prices for airlines and passengers. Heathrow would dispute that. We are going to hear a little later, I believe, from Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, who's going to set out a bit more detail about this.
Pre-packaged milkshakes and lattes are expected to be hit by the sugar tax in an announcement ahead of tomorrow's budget. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is expected to tell the Commons later that the government will end the exemption for milk-based drinks. The move would not include those made in cafes and restaurants. And you can hear the budget live and in full here tomorrow on LBC. Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims he was racist towards pupils while at school. He says there are hugely political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. Reform UK says the allegations are entirely without foundation. And Ofcom has urged technology companies to step up their efforts to tackle the online abuse towards women and girls. The communications regulator has published new guidance. It includes measures such as prompts that'll ask users to reconsider before posting harmful content. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 8 at 95.26. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest, another mild day. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do people ever tell you something and you just think that can't be right? Intelligent people, sensible people, informed people, they'll tell you something and you'll just go, that just can't be right. Somebody told me yesterday that council tax bans are calculated according to the value of your home, according to an assessment carried out in 1991. 1991. I was going to do that as a hook and tease. I was going to say to you, do you want to have a guess at when your house's value was assessed for council tax banding purposes? But then I thought, no, because no one will guess that correctly. The only people who will get that right are the people who know. Nobody would think it was 1991. Well, it's 25 plus 19. 44 years ago. No, that can't be right. 34 years. Oh, always. When will I learn? Never do maths on the radio. 1991. 25 plus 9. 34 years ago. That's insane. And then I stopped to think, is it actually insane? Because if you were to plot a graph of house prices, wouldn't it be fairly steady? Wouldn't the gradient be fairly level? And the bits when it tapers off or goes flat, they'd all go flat. Do you see what I mean? So, in fact, surely everybody's house's value, in percentage terms, has changed by roughly the same amount? Does that sound bonkers? I've got a friend who lives in Stoke and Church, and he is the only person I know whose flat has not changed in value at all in all the years that he's owned it. I don't know whether he overpaid or whether something is unique to that particular environ. But apart from him, I presume... I always remember being at a Christmas party years ago. I told you about this at the time. And one of my newish neighbours was wanging on about how much all our houses had gone up in value. And the neighbour who I then became very good friends with, I first sort of came to my attention by pointing out that it was still only worth one house. So unless you were prepared to move somewhere where the houses cost considerably less than where you lived now, then the value, the nominal value of your house was largely irrelevant in the context of where you lived. Do you see what I mean? It was a really clever observation. Even if you were to move somewhere that was considerably less than where you live now, that would have gone up by the same percentage amount. So the only time you really take advantage of house prices is when you downsize considerably and end up having a lot more money left over to spend on other stuff than you would have done had you stayed in your original house. But every house is worth one house. Would you like to hear Sir Martin of Lewis? Has Martin been knighted yet? Is anyone keeping an eye on this? We should do that. Gong Watch. Should we introduce Gong Watch for Martin? Why does Martin Lewis not have a knighthood? Has anyone done more for the general public in this country than Martin Lewis? I listen, full disclosure, I declare an interest. He's a pal of mine, we were on the same. Defeated. University Challenge Team, celebrity, they don't call it celebrity, you can see why if I was on it. But the same sort of grown-up University Challenge Team. But even if I didn't know him personally, I'd be the president of his fan club. Lad's a genius. Everything he touches is just right. He's probably made you more money than Rachel Reeves ever has in the context of following his advice. But he's pretty good on this, as he is good on everything. It's not just me who thinks it's bonkers.
And when I say drive by, I'm literally talking a couple of estate agents in a car often with a clipboard in second gear going band C, band D, band E. And that is still in place today. So no surprise, up to 400,000 homes are in the wrong band.
400,000 homes are in the wrong band. Martin Lewis there completely explaining my tentative theory that this wasn't quite as bonkers as it originally sounded. What if you put a swimming pool in the basement in the ensuing 34 years? What if you've built an extension that's bigger than the original house? What if you've put one of those super basements in that used to be all the rage about 5 or 10 years ago? Everywhere you went in parts of London, there'd be like diggers. Do you remember the myth about how if you dug a basement under your house, it was impossible to get it out again? So parts of Mayfair were full of basements that actually had full JCBs interred beneath the bottom of the ground floor. Apparently an urban myth, but I digress. How are they going to do it if they bring this thing in tomorrow? They're going to do it, presumably, according to a system that is 34 years old and contains at least, well, not far shy of 500,000 mistakes. If you find yourself in band G or band H, then you are potentially going to get hit, only if it's worth over a certain amount. So if you're band G or band H in Cleethorpes, and I'm only picking Cleethorpes because that's where Ron lives, you're unlikely to qualify for the mansion tax. But if you're in H, do you see what I mean? I mean, it's going to be an absolute nightmare to simply police it, to do the logistics of it. In fact, one front page today says mansion tax will cause Labour a world of trouble in budget, warns top economist. And it's a proper top economist. It's the former head of the Institute of Fiscal Studies. It's not one of the weirdos they used to wheel out and describe as a top economist.